This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
Well, I hope not.
Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our new hour. Multiple hours. I'm Ron Douglas, Colorado Ron, and I'm here with Bubba Da Vinci. And this is the official Backwoods Home Magazine radio show, Self-Reliance Exposed. And we are here to cover several topics this morning. Hope everybody got up early and has their pen and paper in hand and ready to take notes, because we've got all kinds of recipes to go over. We've got gardening to cover. We've got all kinds of things. Bubba, you there?
I'm here. Guys, I apologize. When we decided to do this three-hour show, the biggest thing that when we first discussed it that came up is Colorado Ron is not a morning person. Yeah, unfortunately for him, I am. I'm a 4 a.m.er. And, I was leaning back in my chair here this morning, cracking up, because I said, hey, you do the intro this morning, and I'll sit here and kind of listen. And I did it with kind of a smirk on my face, because when we were doing our show prep a few minutes ago, he was already going, oh, this is so early. Oh, I just wanted to hear how we did this opening up.
Why are you airing my laundry, man? Oh, yeah, okay, all right. I'll admit it. I am not a morning person. Morning stink. I have a rough time with the mornings. I'm a night owl, though. I mean, I can stay up all night, but you know, come 4 a.m. Oh my gosh, no! I don't know how this guy does it. Every time we go on trips together, he's just up and at him. Thank goodness that he's kind enough that he doesn't wake me up. But he'll start texting me, so I have to silence my phone, because he'll start texting me saying, "Call me when you're up." And I look at my phone; it's like 5:15.
See, that's the benefit of having such a wonderful wife like you do, Colorado. Yeah, Heather has the job of getting up early in the morning and making sure all the kids are up and getting ready out of the house, and Colorado Ron gets to sleep in a little bit. So God bless Heather for handling all that stuff. But yeah, that's going to have to start training you on how to be a morning person.
Only once a week.
Yeah, although only once a week. That's right. So, good morning, everybody. This is our first week at a three-hour show. A lot of people on Facebook and everything else asked why we went on to a three-hour show. And believe it or not, our number one show after we launched was a three-hour show that we accidentally did at our Dallas Expo. Originally, it was supposed to be a one-hour show. And Colorado Ron, you know, and I could not leave the desk. Every time we'd say, okay, well, we're about ready to wrap it up, we'd get pop up on either our chat room and blog talk, which, you know, guys, if you have the ability, hop on. We'd love to get your questions on there. Or on our Facebook chat, people would go, hey, we'd like to hear from this vendor. Hey, we'd like to hear this. And the show went 3 hours. I mean, it was unbelievable.
It was long. I was surprised.
Yeah, and although it was 3 hours, it wasn't exhausting because the time goes by so quick. And when we launched this show, when we launched the two shows, I mean, as you guys know, we used to be a weekly show Friday nights at 8 p.m., and it was a rotation. It was Backwoods Home Magazine show and Self-Reliance Exposed. And each one, they're kind of kindred spirits in the sense that, you know, Backwoods Home Magazine does a fantastic job of putting out information via their magazine, and what we did is we talked to their writers and some of the people that write their books and cover their stories. And then on the flip side, every other week, Self-Reliance Exposed, we would talk about Colorado Ron and my experience in just dealing with not only becoming preppers, but we would talk to our vendors. And it just each show seemed like it was remarkably short. We'd just kind of get into the meat and potatoes of the conversations, and then it would be time to go. And so we decided to go ahead and try a three-hour show. So
we're going to try it.
That's right.
We're going to try it, but it's tough. Yeah, the hard part was, you know, like you said, getting into the meat and potatoes. We were just getting in there where we were actually going to really learn something. And boom, we had to go. And Steve, the board op here, he loves pushing those doggone buttons on me at the wrong time, where right when I'm getting ready to get into the meet, it's time to go, and he likes to send his little Tweety Bird to let me know, time's up. It's like,
if I never hear that Tweety Bird again, I think we need to change that because it's crazy. That was my impression of the bird. That's pretty bad.
I told him I'm a string of that bird.
This is our first, on top of being the first show and getting Colorado Ron up early and everything else, you've been traveling Colorado. I mean, actually, we both have, but you've been out there running around, and what have you been doing?
Well, I flew into Phoenix to check out, you know, obviously, we did the Self-Reliance Expo, so I flew into Phoenix to check out a facility down there, and I signed on that paperwork yesterday confirming our new facility. So we'll be doing one in October at the Mesa Convention Center in Mesa, Arizona. And what was really cool about the trip was I had an opportunity, and I'm actually looking at it right now. Where is it? Oh, here it is. I had an opportunity to meet Lisa Bedford, and I
Lisa
got a
Bedford,
chance
Survivor
to...
Mom of Survivor,
Survivor Mom.
Survivor
Mom, yes. Yes, and so I got to... She gave me an autographed copy of her new book that's coming out on Tuesday, so I got it first.
Okay, Lisa Bedford, if you're listening, don't forget there's another 50% of this partnership, and I expect an autographed copy too. I'll pay for it, because, you know, as we all know, yeah, you do have to sell the book, but yeah, I like an autographed copy too. I hate to be left out. My tears streaming down my eye right now. No. So hey,
well, it made for a great read on the airplane. It made for a great read, and you know, I obviously I didn't get through it all on the plane. I'm kind of a slow reader anyway, but it was very well written. I'm very impressed so far. I'll give a review on that at another time, but once I'm done with it. But you know, so far it's been great. But it was awesome to meet her and her husband. We went out to lunch, And you know, it was like meeting old friends. It was great. We just sat down, had a good old time. So.
Well, good. I'm looking. Actually, I met her once before, although I doubt she'll remember. She came to an event in Dallas, Texas, and spoke. And I walked up to her and her husband and her kids as they were. I accosted them outside the hotel because we were just looking at getting into Bubba Da Vinci. So we drove the 3 hours to go see the show. And I saw her outside, and I recognized her from her blog and walked up and asked her a few questions. And she was very pleasant. And so I'm looking forward to getting to spend a little more time, especially now that I'm on the other side and we're, you know, doing a little bit more with her. She probably won't give me that weird look as she walks away, like, I can't believe that guy just grabbed me in the parking lot. So, yeah, and when I'm a little shaggy with my black cowboy hat on, I probably look like someone you should run from as opposed to someone that you should be walking up to. And I just heard from Steve that Lisa will actually be on the Berkey Guy show this coming Tuesday. So I'm going to have to listen to that so we can kind of listen and see what some of the stuff that she's up to. It's pretty exciting stuff. So I'm so excited. Arizona in October. You know something? Considering the fact that I'm up north now in Iowa and October is going to start. It won't be very cold, but it'll start getting cold. Being able to go spend a week or so in Arizona will be quite pleasant.
Hey, that's nice. Why we scheduled it that way.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, because we're not about teaching you guys stuff here. We're about getting to warmer weather so we don't have to struggle. That's exactly what we're all about.
Yeah, the show dates are actually confirmed as October 26th or 27th.
That's
so
awesome.
That's a Friday, Saturday. Yep, the last Friday and Saturday of October.
Hold on, that's dates. I'm going to have to check. You did this to me last year. Those might actually be the first week of deer hunting season. Oh, man. I'll have to look.
you don't ever get anything anyway.
that's true. That's true. But I like to sit in the tree stand and let my family take pictures of me so when I post them on Facebook, people think I can actually hunt. I still buy my meat at Hy-Vee or at Walmart. Today in a few minutes we'll be talking to we have some great guests today. We have Scott Williams from Down to Earth Seeds. We've interviewed him a few different times at our expos and things like that. Scott is been in the business for a very long time, and he likes to make fun of me with Colorado Rod because I have no skill. My thumb is black, not green, and he'll be talking to us this afternoon. And then after our halfway through the show, we'll be talking to Linda Morehouse, who is an author of Cast Iron Cuisine from Breakfast to Dessert, and is a it's also a contributing author to our magazine. So that's pretty cool. Let me think. And then we'll actually be talking about some of the things that have been going on this week. So I actually did some traveling this week also, but it has absolutely nothing to do. I was actually on the West Coast for the entire week. And let me tell you, it was sweet. Sweet.
I bet the money was pretty nice over there, wasn't it?
It was. And I'm gonna kind of let another secret. You know, a lot of men, I'll talk really deeply now because we're all men. A lot of men out there don't like to admit all the boy or childish hobbies that they have. And Colorado Ron and I have a kind of hobby, still hobby, but mostly past hobby that we both had in common when we first met. And that was video games. And Colorado Ron played some video games and I actually worked in the business or still work in the business. And so I was out at a thing called the Game Developers Conference all week. Seeing all the new games that were coming out. And I was told that I can't say the name, although in the next 2-3 weeks I am going to try to get them on the air. There is a game that's coming out that is Prepper-esque.
Really?
The game is – oh, yeah. It was pretty cool. It's a Facebook game. It's kind of like a Farmville. It's actually designed after Farmville. But the concept is getting prepared for – you know, the end of the world, and you have a certain amount of time. There's a clock on there, and you have to, the more friends you get, the faster you get things done. And it's kind of funny. Colorado Rod and I talked in the past about, we should get a game together that kind of does this. This teaches you nothing, but it's still quite fun because it's. Although now I probably just lost that interview, didn't I?
It teaches you nothing,
but it was very entertaining. I mean, I was sitting there running, and you know, you have to work. You know, you could, there's various ways you can make money, and you're making money. And then all of a sudden, it's like you have to go run down and buy your supplies. But and then there's a timer on the supplies, so like you buy meat, and then the power goes out because if something happens, and then you forget to go ahead and you didn't have solar built onto your house, and then this meat rots and it's useless. And you know what it is? It's a Farmville meets The Sims. Remember the original Sims game? Did you ever play The Sims? SimCity?
No, I never played
SimCity. You never played SimCity?
No.
Okay. SimCity was a game that
I played manly games.
Manly games. All right. Well, on that note, before my manhood gets insulted any further, we should probably get ready to get rid of this guy. Maybe a little bit later, I'll throw this back out there. Hopefully, I'm afraid to actually look at chat because I'm sure there's a bunch of people calling me a pansy for playing a game like this. But that's okay, guys. That's okay. I'm secure in my manhood. All right, so after the break, we are going to have Scott Williams from Down to Earth Seeds, we'll see what he has to say about what I'm going to kill this year. All right, so let's go ahead and go to break.
All right.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
I'm Colorado Ron, and I'm here with Bubba DaVinci. Thanks for listening to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. And our guest on for today is Scott Williams. Scott Williams has been in the seed business for quite a while and is probably one of the most knowledgeable guys that I know in the seed business. So, Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am, Ron.
How's it going, man?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing?
Good. How about you guys?
Well, I think it's
We're doing good.
Early for Colorado Ron.
It is a little early for me, man. Give me a break. It's too early. No, we're doing good. We're doing great. The I'm starting to wake up here. The sun's shining through the window here, so I'm starting to wake up. But before we even start this interview, I had an email this week with a serious question for you, Scott Williams.
Okay.
We got two seconds. All right, so, Scott, the serious question is where in the world did you find your shirts that you wear at the expo?
Well, I have a special New York designer make them for me, and, you know, they cost $1,000 each. We do take orders for them. So if anybody wants one, just send us your size, shape, and we'll get you in line. They're going quick, though. We're thinking about having to do a price increase.
So. You do know when I was at the expo that somebody said, "Where's that seed company at? The guy that wears those fruity shirts."
The fruity shirts.
Hey, and for those of you guys that haven't been to the expo and haven't met Scott, he wears these awesome. It almost looks like a Hawaiian shirt, but it's got vegetables all over it. It's pretty cool shirts that he wears, and it's funny that it's been brought up several times at the expo, and then right before we interview you, I get an email about your shirt. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Well, you know, you got to play the part. I mean, it is my job, and it is what I do. So. You got to go with the flow, and at least somebody remembered me. I mean, that's always good.
That's always good.
You know, if this was back in the late 80s, early 90s, Scott, you would be a trendsetter. Do you guys remember when every major band and everything else had their own ties? I mean, the Beatles, you know, it was like the Beatles ties and the, you know, Grateful Dead ties. And, you know, we could have had the Scott, you know, the down-to-earth seed ties, you know, all the different fruits and everything.
Yeah, we might even be able to get a disco song named after it or something like that. You know, the seed stomp or something like that.
What Bubba really just said is you're 20 years too late to set your own chair.
Or 20 years too early, because everything goes in the cycle, right?
hey, guys, I don't even remember those days, so, you know.
Well, okay, this is a family friendly show, so we won't go there. We'll do that. We'll do that after hours. One of those conversations. I bet you're excited.
Well, yeah, you know, things are going good. The sun is shining down here in Arkansas. We're planting seedlings, ready to get transplanted. Gardening is a thing that's very present. Everything's blooming. I know it may not be where all the listeners are, but we're in the middle of paradise here, and it's an exciting time because everything's fresh and new, and you feel life in the air, and really that's what it's all about. You know, I heard you guys talking about the video games. Unfortunately, you know, if you said you learned nothing from that. But that's really face reality, because if people are out there and you got a certain time limit to prepare because you got the money, you got to buy this, you didn't get this installed because, hey, that's life. I don't know about you guys, but that's what's always happened in mine, is that when you got the money, you don't have the time, you don't get it in, all of a sudden you need it. Now what do I do? Where do I go? So I think it's more
exactly.
Reality than that game may really portray. So I think the guy may have something, and we can play fake it as a game, but I think it needs to be looked at more reality. And instead of, you know, insert name here, I think you need to put your name in those games and say, am I doing this right, guys? You know, did I just crash my system because I didn't prepare or have enough money or have my solar system up and went out and bought a freezer full of meat, you know. That's what it's all about. So there's more reality there than you really think. So
now you're in Arkansas, so you're right down there in tornado country, aren't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. We get our share around us, so we're about 3 hours from Joplin that got hit last year. So
okay. Yeah, well,
we
wonder what just happened in. Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few of them that's going on down there recently. I was kind of surprised how many hit. It was ridiculous, like 150 or something like that. Tornadoes have hit so far this last month. So that was pretty nuts. But back onto your seeds here. One of the other questions that I've actually had, and I thought it was a good question because I had no idea myself. The seeds that you sell, do you harvest those yourself?
Well, I would love to say yes, but as I've said in my talks at the shows and anytime else I'm interviewed, is that there's a whole different take on the actual seed industry. And although we get all these seed catalogs and there's seed savers associations, there's a really big picture out there that you have to look at, and I've preached this for the last 15 years of the control of our seed system in America and actually worldwide, that there's a bunch of seed companies who are repackers, and some of them grow their own specialty varieties of seed, not all of what's in their catalogs. They have their specialty squash or pumpkins or cantaloupe or whatever that they grow and harvest and actually produce and package themselves. But the general bulk of the seed out there comes from roughly 15 suppliers nationwide. And unfortunately, those guys are owned by approximately four owners. And
wow.
It's really a tight system. It's not if it's going to happen. It's already happened. It's there. It's presence. It's very public knowledge. Just people don't realize it or see it. So to answer the question, no, I do not. I would love to say, yeah, I get mine from a local grower here in the Midwest. You know, that could be another seed company that I buy them from. I've heard that aspect before. But knowing the ins and outs of the seed business, nobody gets them, nobody grows them. They bring them in. They may grow a few varieties, but in truth, to grow the volume I have and to keep genetically clean, I would need 24,000 acres to do it with. And
Well, and that was my comment when my wife and I were talking about that on the way back to the expo. She's sitting there, reading the package on your seeds, and she asked the question too. And I thought, man, he sells so many seeds that, I mean, that would be a you'd have to have a ton of workers out there just to keep on top of it because of the amount of seeds you sell. So I didn't think so, but I just wanted to ask, make sure.
Well, and I've heard every story out there of, people saying where they get their seeds from, and I just kind of look at them and give them that look like, I know, and then they admit, I know exactly where they're getting them from. They know where they're getting them from, so it's not a big hoax, but I've always maintained that I'm about knowledge and education and trying to give people the right product to do what they need to get done. It's about the sale, yes, but, it's part of me also. I do this because I want to, not because it's a financially secure system or anything. So I'm out there to help the people. If it's knowledge they need, I have tons of knowledge. Actually, there's a DVD out there. I think you need to get on YouTube or Hula or something like that. What's it called? Can't even think of it right now.
About Monsanto or whatever?
Yeah, it's Future of Food. The Future of Food. I read
yeah,
it. Everybody
yeah,
watched
yeah, yeah.
that. And
I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you because, obviously we hear a lot of in the news about Monsanto. And then, first of all, one of the questions we need to clarify here is, can you define the definition of heirloom seed? And then we'll go into, after that, I'm going to ask you, what is Monsanto that everybody keeps bringing up, and what's the difference between that and just regular good old fashioned heirloom seeds?
Well, heirloom
seeds. First of all, can you define heirlooms?
Yeah, heirloom seeds. There's actually three names for an heirloom seed. They're non-hybrid and open-pollinated. Okay, those are just terms associated with heirloom seeds. So those are the three seeds I'm going to describe. What it is that an heirloom seed is a seed that has been growing in areas, they fight over the age of how old it has to be, but somewhere around 45 to 50 years. And the biggest part of it is not that it's just been grown and cultivated in the United States or wherever for that long a time, but what happens is when you save the seed from that variety, it will, and plant it next year, it'll actually produce the same, it'll replicate itself. It will produce the same thing over and over and over again. So that's the whole thing. So what you see today is what you're going to get tomorrow, and for generations, and everything else. And the heirloom seeds are the seed, basically the seed stock of our nation, because they are the foundational standards that they take all the hybrids and GMOs off of. They have to start with something. They have to start with a foundational seed somewhere, and then they combine the traits. So the heirloom seeds are the ones that when you grow it, you harvest the tomato, squash, pickle, take the seeds out of it, save it in your own house. Next year you're going to be able to grow that same type of tomato, pickle, squash. And the thing about saving your seeds and with these heirloom varieties, Bubba's up in Iowa, I'm in Arkansas, and Ron's out in Colorado. So it's just like if we took the same tomato and we all grew it, and 10 years later, we compared our fruit that we kept harvesting off of our ground at those locations, they're going to have a different taste. They're going to have different textures because the seeds will actually acclimate to the climate and soil conditions and the water and the minerals and everything else in those specific areas. Now, we really didn't change the seed. We just brought out different attributes of the plant itself due to the conditions they're being continually growing in. And I know if Bubba or Ron come down to Arkansas and live, they're going to have certain problems with acclimating to our everything down here for the first year. And same way with me going up to them. So it's the same with seeds, that you will end up generating the same product year after year after year. Therefore, then you're not then you don't have to go back to the seed company, to me. You know, I look for a one-time sale because if I do my job right, educate you right, give you a proper product, that you should be able to generate your own seed supply yourself and not need another source of seed. And that's really what it's all about, is being able to be self-productive in that way.
So I have a quick question, I kill everything. When you were talking about the different areas, so when you're looking at things, you should definitely look up the information and find out what seeds work better for your zone or your area. Yeah, because you can't necessarily just plant anything. Just because it's an heirloom seed and you can grow it doesn't necessarily mean you can grow it well in your area. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, but the thing I've always looked at, and even when we designed a kit and looking at heirloom seeds, is that there is a strain, there's a common denominator factor in most all things. Pacific Northwest has a hard time growing tomatoes. They just have a lot of rain and everything. Colorado has high altitude. Iowa has hog farmers and corn. I don't know what they have out there. the South has its own little, drought tolerant, 110 degree days. The East Coast has their problems out there, Pacific problems. To say an heirloom seed won't grow anywhere, that's false. It just takes a different gardening method to grow it possibly in your area. Let's say if Ron wants to grow watermelon at 8,000 feet, he's going to have a hard time without having some type of starting them indoors, getting a longer growing season. He don't have to worry about sunshine. He gets 280 days of sunshine out there anyway. He's going to have to extend his heat, though. He's going to have to extend his growing season. So they will all grow anywhere. It's just that we need, it's not altitude that's making a problem. It's the growing time, the BTUs or the heat units that you get from the sun. So
you're absolutely right on that, because we grew our watermelons last year, and it was about the size of a softball. By the time
right.
it got cold out, it was too late.
Yeah, you know, so if you started them or was able to extend your season a little bit, you could have had, you know, watermelon fridge at least, you know, for the refrigerator, you know, the basketball size. So, you know, you guys probably are not going to grow okra like they do here in the South. You probably don't even know what okra is. But
oh, I miss okra. I do miss okra.
we definitely know okra. We can eat.
Okay. But, you know, I've always told people, I said, okay, this is a situation that, one, people procrastinate. They want to get their supplies. They really don't want to go out and garden today, although they should, even if it's container gardening or plant some peppers on the back porch. But they're putting the seeds away for times when they need them. And I always say, are you sure you're going to be living where you're at then? If not, why have a seed kit that's definitely made for northern Maine when that's where you happen to be at, and all of a sudden you realize that under economic conditions or even under survival or maybe family change and you just want to go south or you want to go west, who says you're going to live there in 3 years? I mean, I plan on staying here for a long time, but I'm not banking on it. Because things do change, people do move, times, adverse conditions change, and you do move. So I would rather have a kit or have seeds and know to have the knowledge of growing things all over the United States than I would just site specific, you know.
Well, and like you
and
said,
that's
mean,
what a lot
mean,
of people
the,
forget.
The seed. Well, and like you said, the seed will eventually adapt if you keep harvesting the same seed to the climate that you're at. Is that correct?
They'll do a certain amount to the climate you're at. You know, unless you do, I don't care what watermelon you get. You know, it's still a long season thing, but you have to adapt your growing habits to that. When I'm out in Colorado, and I know when I go back out there, they will ask me, will these grow at 8,000 feet? I said, not a lot of things grow at 8,000 feet. You have to adapt to that. You know, I can give you high-altitude seeds, you know, but if you don't have a growing system, such as maybe a way to start them indoors so you get another month out of it, and a way to cover them up outdoors in the last month to basically get 5 months instead of 3 months of growing season out of them. So
okay.
the seeds are adaptable. Go ahead.
Sorry. Let me ask you a quick question here then. Well, I don't know how quick this is, but like we said, Monsanto is all over the news. I see it on Facebook. I see people posting up. Why is Monsanto bad, if it is?
Well, what they've done, you know, and I've said this for 15 years also, and I'm not the only one saying it. As you said, everybody talks about it. What they've done, okay, since we were talking about this adaptability, okay, they've actually taking the genetics of these varieties of seeds, okay? We just talked about being able to save them, and they produce their own seed year after year, and you can save them, and you're going to get the same crop, okay? What they've done is they've taken maybe a gene out of – actually, they've done this, okay? Out of, like, a North Atlantic fish. And then they took the tomato, and they took certain genes out of it, and they put this fish – one in there as a short season tomato, and basically it's cold weather tolerant now because of this genetic code they implanted in it. Therefore, you get what they call, I know there's one called Early Girl, And it's a very, very early tomato. And it's a very, very short season tomato. But it's totally, it's not going to produce a good viable seed the next year. So Monsanto, in one way, you could look at them as, oh, wow, they're able to be able to give me a seed that will produce in my area where normally it wouldn't, okay? That would be about the only plus I could say for the company.
Scott,
on the other hand,
so we're talking. This is what they term GMO seeds, right? Are GMO?
Well, actually, they're termed as hybrid and GMO. Okay, hybrid is when they force a cross pollination that normally would not happen. Okay, if I have black cows and white cows in a field, and only one bull, the one bull will satisfy its own color herd first before it satisfies the other color herd. Sounds weird, but that's actually how nature works it. So in normal, if we kept them fenced apart, the blacks would breed black and the whites would breed white. It's only when we force the pollination or force this genetic strain. And, you know, nature has its way of fixing that because it may produce a fruit that's cold weather tolerant that year. But next year it's all going to be screwed up. You're not going to get the same quality or quantity or the same desired effect the next year if it does even produce because it's an unnatural cross. Now, the genetically modified GMOs, that's where they actually go in and splice the DNA. And they've got that seed so screwed up that the plant, after you watch Food Future of Food, they explain it very well in there, but it's basically a one-time shot seed that's or a plant that I wouldn't even classify as a food source because it's so screwed up, it's so adulterated, I don't think it really has the quality of being labeled as food because of its genetic...
Really?
Genetic stuff. I mean, they're having huge, huge debates. That's what this whole thing is about. Should GMOs be classified as food?
Wow.
And that's really where it's gotten to. Once you, like I said, you watch this film, and it'll change your whole mindset on reading the label. And unfortunately, in our country, is one of the only countries that do not require labeling of GMO products. So, welcome
how
to the course.
How prevalent is this, Scott? I mean, are we talking about if I walk into the store and I'm looking at, I'm in Walmart and I'm in the fruits and vegetables section, what percentage of that stuff do you think is actually GMO and what percentage is hybrid and what percentage is, you know, is natural?
I would say if they don't have an organic section, I would say... Probably 85% of what you see is hybrid. It's really hard to tell. They really haven't gone tremendously big into genetically modifying vegetable garden seeds yet because there's not this huge, you know, field plantings and all that stuff. It's more into the rape, canola, corn, soybean products. So in the produce side of the fruit store, you're going to see probably 85%, if not more, that are hybrids. That means they're force-crossed, will not produce. I mean, if you took the average tomato out of the grocery store and saved seeds from it, you're probably not going to be able to get a tomato plant out the next year. Genetically modified now, that's all over the grocery store because it's in our corn chips, it's in our corn syrup, it's in our anything with soy in it. I mean, almost 90% of our corn crop and soybean crop in the United States has been contaminated with GMO. And, you know, for what we buy at the grocery store. Now, you can search it out, health food stores, people who are doing the niche marketing of non-GMO products, but our whole system has been contaminated by this genetic garbage they've put out there, and they can't control it. That's the big thing. It'd be one thing if we'd said we did this by design. Somebody did, I think. But, you know, the farmer plants his seed in his yard and uses the genetically modified, and I'm sitting there going, no way, I'm all organic. And then next year I have my seed tested and I have genetically modified corn in my seed. How'd I do that? And that's what's happened is that it cross-pollinates over into mine. It doesn't have a barrier. So we've contaminated our whole seed system.
Well, that's interesting. And that's why I like getting the seeds that I have from you, because then, my wife asked me, she goes, well, should I save these seeds? I'm like, no, let's use them, because if we use it properly, we'll have a whole new supply for next year from our garden, correct?
Yep.
Okay,
that's right.
So now my question to you is, I wanted to get to know you just a little bit more besides your fruity shirts. You went from a diesel mechanic to selling seeds. How did you do that? And why?
Well, we started, I was approached 15 years ago. That was right around Y2K. Actually, it was 97. And I was in construction work, and I was a diesel mechanic, or diesel technician, if you want to give me a title. And we lived the lifestyle of a prepper. That's before prepper was a word, you know. I was country before country was cool type thing. That was our lifestyle. Whether it was because I was cheap, couldn't afford food in the store, or whether I just want that lifestyle, I don't know what it was. But, you know, we canned, we grew vegetables, we did organics, we raised cattle and chickens and milk cows, and we lived off the farm, you know. And we canned food and froze food and everything else. So it was a lifestyle for us, but it wasn't a profitable lifestyle for us. It was a health and lifestyle we chose because of our kids and the way we wanted to live. So I made money by monkeying around on vehicles and tractors and heavy equipment and building homes. So along comes Y2K, and a good friend of mine was actually in the food business, dehydrated food prepper business at that time. He also was an ex-computer programmer, so he had a little insight what was looking at happening. And he said, nobody out there is providing a seed kit that will save anybody, is good enough to actually grow and enough varieties and everything else. He says, you live this lifestyle, why don't you put together one? I said, I don't know anything about the business, but, you know, over the next couple months, we felt that it was a desire that, one, we had the knowledge, we lived the lifestyle, we grew the stuff, we had a in the dirt knowledge of what was going on, how to feed a family, how much it took, varieties, different growing conditions, everything else. We sat there and says, well, we really felt that we need to express our knowledge to other people to allow them to make the choice of a good product. And that's why we did research and got connections and developed the seed kit we did. And so it wasn't
awesome.
That. Hey, there's lots of money in this. It was, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right and for the right reason. And most of it was for the knowledge base and the educational side of it. Because that's why I am very, very free, even at your – any time I do interviews and that stuff, it's not about me. At least I hope it's not about me. I want people to understand the need and the ability, and you know, Bubba's going to have a hard time with this. I realize this, but we're working with him. You know, his family. I've got his family educated, and they're going to sit there and watch over him very closely when he's outside with any type of equipment.
Very closely,
so he doesn't plow it up. You know, and that's what it's all about. You know, I don't care if you got a 2-year-old growing corn, you know, for the first time in his life. Or if you got a container garden of lettuce in your front porch, you've got to do it because it's a good experience. It's the way it should be. There's no greater joy than watching your kids come in with broccoli or Brussels sprouts, and you said, "I don't think they like broccoli, honey." But look at this! Oh, Dad, look at my broccoli! You know,
Yeah, for the first time, what we've done this year is we set up an area in the garden for our kids that's strictly their area. They each all have their own area, and so they can grow whatever they want in there. And so it was pretty cool to go through the seeds and then, you know, then picking and choosing what they wanted to grow. So it'll be pretty exciting to see this year what's going to go on there. Now, one of the other questions I had is, as people are preparing to plant, some people are already planting, some people are doing starters. What are some of the preps? What are some of the steps to prepare to plant?
Well, the biggest thing you have to do, and I watch my wife do this all the time, is you have to plan a garden. Okay, it's not just something you walk outside and says, okay, I guess we're going to have a garden, throw some seeds out and they grow. I know Scott's tried that. I know other people have tried this before, but there has to be a little bit of planning. You just don't. I don't know if you ever seen Secondhand Lions. You know,
yeah.
If you haven't, that's excellent movie. It all looks like corn to me. So some people are technically challenged, even though they're a techie, and so you need to say, okay, what do we eat? What do we feel we want to challenge ourselves with as far as growing? You know, and do something that's successful. You know, lettuce is a great crop because it's the closest thing to instant gratification we have in the gardening world because it's short. It grows good. It grows anywhere. You can grow it inside. You can grow it outside. You can grow it on a container. Plan out kind of what you want. Then, you know, right now, everybody needs to be looking at, okay, if I'm going to plant this many fruits or this many different varieties of vegetables, I need approximately, I mean, there's tons of information either, you know, in books that I have or books on the internet on spacings, row planting, you know, all this gardening stuff. Just don't look for the beginner's guide to gardening Bible out there of one person's suggestion. Just take two or three people's suggestion and see what fits for you. And you can't do it wrong. I know people tried, even in Secondhand Lions, you know, they had a good corn crop. I mean, they did a good job. But you know, they you need to go out and then start preparing your soil. You know, make sure you have some way of watering it. You know, don't plant it somewhere where, you know, all of a sudden say, well, yeah, it's in a great place. The sunshine's hitting it great and everything else, but you know, I can't get water to it. You know, and then again, you don't want to put it somewhere right next to where it's really, really convenient for you, and it gets absolutely no sunshine. So that's what I mean by planting a garden. You have to kind of look now. The leaves are all off the trees. You know, everything's starting to bud. Of course, everything has light. But what's going to happen in, you know, July? What's going to happen in August? Where's that sun coming in at? You know, you want to make sure you water it good. Don't want to have it on a hillside where the water, when you do get rain, it's going to wash out all that fresh dirt. So it's just kind of prepping your soil. You know, if you have a tiller or if you have a neighbor that has a tiller, you know, go out and dig it up. You know, get it loosening up. You know, if you have any fertilizer, if you have a neighbor that has horses or some animals where you can get some of their manure and put on the garden right now. It's a great time to do it. Dig it in. And so you're basically now you're
neighbor,
preparing.
We have a neighbor down the street.
Yeah.
We have a neighbor down the street that does llamas. Is that right? Is that a good one?
Yeah, well, you know, you're just looking for the composting material. I don't care what it came out of.
Okay.
So, you know, there's most of these guys would love to have you and your family come down and clean their barn for them. It's just one less chore they have to do. See?
Absolutely.
So, you know, don't expect them to load it in your pickup and, you know, pay you, here's $50, thanks for coming and getting it, you know. That's probably not going to happen. But, you know, and then, you know, now you've got some fertility there. If you don't want to go organically, you can always get products down at the local, you know, feed store or local hardware store for fertilization. Soil test is good.
Bubba bought a new enclosed trailer this week that I might use to go and haul some manure with.
So thanks. A brand new trailer to haul around horse manure. Yeah, that's exactly what we want. Yeah, nice and closed trailer to go ahead and do that. So I appreciate the thought. And before we finish this topic up, I want to let everybody know I'm going to have a successful growing season this year because I'm going to plant weeds. And I can grow weeds like nobody's business. I'll send a picture of my lawn and everybody will agree I can grow weeds like there's nobody's business.
You said you had a black thumb. I don't believe it, you know. there's people out there making lots of money by growing weeds.
Oh yeah, but unfortunately I don't know if that's legal. So Scott, we're coming close to the end of the hour here, so I think there's a couple things that we want to make sure you get out there. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, first of all, on your website, do you have any information as far as, seeds and some articles on there that people can read?
We try to post at least two new articles on different subjects every week on our website. There's tons of information from planting zones, what the plants do, how to plant them, recipes. I mean, we try to put out as much information as we possibly can in the time we have, you know. And most all of the stuff is either our information that we actually, you know, been there, done that thing, or else we recommend, you know, that this is good, solid information. We'll give it it's credible information that we hold as good. It's just, why should we write it if somebody's already invented it? So there's tons of information on our website, lots of links. The blog page I know has tons of information on planting and harvesting and even recipes and stuff like that. And if people have specific questions, the telephone still works. You know, it's either my wife or I that usually answer the phones, or we can be reached. And if somebody has a specific question about gardening, it doesn't have to be about our seeds. It can be about gardening in general that we can try to direct them in their path that they need to go.
Well, on a serious note, if you guys are interested in seeing Scott's pretty vegetable shirt, you can go to SelfRelianceExpo.com and click on the virtual expo. And I just realized that you're wearing that shirt in the video there. So if you go to the virtual expo, this virtual Self-Reliance Expo, and find the best heirloom seeds, that's the title of the video, you'll be able to check out his snazzy attire right there.
and we posted both our blog talk comments and on the Facebook page.
Yep,
right.
Yeah, it's posted up.
I'm running a show special for you guys, and we put it on our website.
Oh, good.
And for the listeners or anybody who's directed there, it is on our website. I suggest everybody goes look at it. It's downtoearthseeds.com. Downtoearthseeds is the plural.
It's actually posted on our Blog Talk Radio chat right now, Scott, and I just posted it on all our Facebook pages.
Yep. And
awesome.
I think we got the technical. The special is we have what we call a 1-year kit. Basically, it's 64 varieties of 32 different vegetables. It comes about 9 pounds of seed. Comes with two books, and it usually runs for $210. Sam, and then we have also what we call a basic kit, which is a little bit smaller kit. 27 different varieties. They're packaged the same way. And what we are looking at is we're giving more or less. The people can buy the kit and get the basic kit for, I think it's $50 more or $47 more. Usually it's, I have the figures in front of me. I think it's usually about $307 for both, and we're offering it for $250, somewhere in that area.
This,
and so it's about $50
like
off.
This is not like the secondhand Lions kit where it's 64 different varieties of corn, right?
No, it's not. It only has two varieties of corn. 37
okay.
different vegetables. So it's the real meal
awesome.
Deal. On our website or on the blog page, you know, if you, whichever way you go, has a listing of all our vegetables, all the quantities, all the varieties, and then if you want to get more in depth, you can go to another page and it'll show the picture of what the fruit looks like and more detail on each individual item. So everything
awesome.
From asparagus to zucchinis in there, and you know, we've really enjoyed being a part of the shows. I really enjoy the virtual expo that you guys put up. I think that's a good way to allow the people who are not able to get to these expos a way of getting the knowledge that we've all accumulated together as a group and that Ron and Bubba have been able to put out there. So, because I think we're all about the same thing. We're all about the education and getting people to the best situation they can be in for whatever need they
need. I agree.
So I think that's the common goal.
Well, sorry about that. We must have a delay in our conversation here. Sorry about that. But, I agree. Again, it's Scott Williams, Down to Earth Seeds. You can find him on our Facebook page. You can find him in our chat room. You can find his links everywhere. You can do a quick Google search, and you can also find him on Self-Reliance Expo and the virtual site. So, Scott, we really appreciate your time coming on here. Again, we've run out of time, but I'd love to have you back on in the future. Check out the deal. We've got the link up for the deal, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon. So thanks a lot again. Appreciate it, Scott. And we'll start
appreciate
our break
you guys.
Shortly.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. God bless you.
Thanks.
Hey, you too, Scott.
All right, guys.
We'll be back. We'll be back in 4 minutes after the next break, people. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers@sunoven.com.
That's preppers at sunoven.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Okay, we're back with Backwoods Home Magazine Self-Reliance Exposed, your only three-hour show that covers everything from beans to bullets. We're going to be with you every single we're going to be with you every single week on Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And Colorado and I will be covering things from Backwoods Home Magazine. We'll be talking to some of the authors of not only their books, but their articles, covering things for the expo. Man, we are just a plethora of information. So that was pretty interesting. Scott is a fountain of information.
He is. He is.
And those are some good questions for this early in the morning for you, Colorado. I mean, I was actually surprised that I was expecting some real basic questions, but I mean, you were out there and asking some well thought out questions. But either your wife came over there and you know kind of smacked you in the face and threw some water in your face, or you're actually starting to become a morning person. I don't know which it is.
No, I'm not becoming a morning person. I can promise you that. But you know, luckily we do have a pretty good audience, so we get questions all the time via email. So it was nice to be able to say, oh yeah, I remember people asking about this or people asking about this. So we were able to amp up the questions there. But that was pretty funny. He's a great guy. He's fun to play. What I like about him is that he's light. You can joke with him. He had a good time with it. He really enjoys what he does.
Right. And here's one of the things, guys, that we are going to endeavor to do on our show is, you know, a lot of other shows that are out there, and there's a lot of very good ones out there. They end up having the same guests a lot and everything else, and you don't really get a broad point of view, at least in my opinion. What Colorado Ron and I want to endeavor to do with this show, and when we hooked up with Backwoods Home and everything else, is we don't want to give you a single point of view. What Colorado Ron does in the suburban area of where he lives, or what I do in the rural area of what I live, you know, is personal choice. And that doesn't mean it's right for you. So our job is to get you as many different people that have been doing this for a long time or quote-unquote experts in their field, and allow you to make the decision what works best for you and what's the right product for you, what's the right path for you. We're just here to give you information, and hopefully we learn some things along the path with you that will help us, you know, on our journey to self-reliance. Some of us are further along than others.
And like you said, it's like you said, though. What's really cool is we get two different, completely different views. Me being living in not a normal neighborhood, but it's close, and you living way out in the country. We're able to hit the same subject in two different areas, you know, with two different points of view. So it's great.
Right, and like I said, we end up having some fantastic people on, like Scott, who is definitely an advocate. Now, as we talk to these people, we try to get you to understand their personal personalities. You know, like, you know, Scott is a person who was a diesel mechanic and moved out there. And one thing we didn't get to cover, and I'm amazed that we had 48 minutes with Scott this time, and we still didn't get everything covered. I mean, we extended the show so we could cover it, and we might have to do a five-hour show. And then you'll have to be up at, 6 o'clock in the morning, Colorado.
I'm not doing a five-hour show, Scott. Not going to happen.
Anyway, but, you know, his family really does live the lifestyle. I mean, his kids, his daughters came to the last show. They raise cattle. They're organic gardeners. They have goats. They have chickens. I mean, they live in the country of Arkansas, and that was my rendition of an Arkansas accent. As you can see, I'm multi-talented. Yeah, that was an Arkansas accent. And we want you to know these people. And we have a wonderful lady coming up here shortly, Linda Morehouse. And she's from California. And, you know, I'm not going to insult her by doing a Valley Girl accent. One, because I do it too well, and that's really embarrassing. But number two is she's definitely not from the Valley. She lives out in the country. And, I mean, she's a delightful woman who, again, lives the lifestyle and is a fountain of information. So looking forward to talking to her in about 20 minutes. But I want to throw something out there. You were Colorado, Ron. You and I were kind of talking the other day, and one of the cover of the current magazine has the Mayan calendar on it, and you know they're talking about different apocalyptic situations, including the zombie apocalypse. And hey, guys, if you're out there and you're waiting for the zombie apocalypse, God bless you. If it happens, I hope they eat me quickly, because I've watched most of those movies and it does not look like a fun lifestyle to be hanging around in. So. I think I'd rather be dinner than trying to survive that. But it's a great magazine because it covers so many situations. One of the things that popped up this week is we almost had like a hint of one of those situations. We had like a massive solar flare. Were you paying attention to that?
Oh, that's right.
Now, it turned out to be a dud.
Most of them are. You know, we have people get worked up about that stuff, and I try not to. Unless all of a sudden my phone doesn't work, my cell phone, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I guess that was a real one. Thank goodness I was prepared. But other than that, I try not to spend too much of my day, you know, preparing for the expos and doing all the stuff that we do. I tend to run out of time, and I don't have time to, you know, get into it deeply and be worried about it. So, you know, like I said, I try to be prepared so I don't have to worry about it and stuff like that.
Well, and that's a good thing, which is, in my opinion, and I think we've had this discussion several times. You know, the reason this is a lifestyle is you should be preparing for just life. You know, don't worry about the individual situations. If you're just going through your normal things and prepping is a lifestyle, and you're prepared with food storage, you know, your water, everything that that we talk about, you know, constantly training and educating yourself, then whether it's the zombie apocalypse or an EMP from a solar flare, you're basically going to be okay. Each scenario obviously has very specific things that you have to do to prepare for it. For example, you know, zombie apocalypse, according to all the movies and everything I've read, you need a catcher's mask, you know, and body armor and a baseball bat or at least a samurai sword. You know, but, you know, for real, you know, situations like what happened with the solar flare, you know, there was two things that you had to be worried about, and one less than the other, which is the solar flare threw out a tremendous amount of radiation up into the air. And this is, and here's the thing, what I always thought is interesting, is people always go, well, that scenario will never happen. And there was a book that was written a couple of years ago called One Second After that was about an EMP attack via a nuclear weapon. And people go, well, what's the likelihood of an EMP attack actually doing anything? Well, the solar flare is almost the same thing. It didn't have to do with a nuclear attack. It's our own sun throwing electromagnetic pulse that, you know, basically hurls across the space and hits the planet. And that discharge can actually affect electronic equipment. And although this one didn't do anything, it's been proven, I mean, they've been able to go back and look and see the size of these enormous flares that have actually hit the planet with enough EMP pulse that it would blow things. But, you know, the last big one was, you know, almost 80 years ago or something like that, and they go back in time. And we didn't have electronics back then that were sensitive to them. And so it just goes to prove that the things that people are talking about aren't just make-believe. I mean, they're things that can actually happen. Did you have any problem with that day at all?
No, I didn't have any problem.
Really? I mean, I was actually in California, and there was a note. It was kind of everybody was kind of tweeting about. There was a noticeable difference in the amount of static and dropped calls. Actually, I was on a call with you guys, and I kept dropping.
Oh, that's right. You did drop. I remember that.
And you guys were having a hard time understanding me because of the static. And I was out in California, and people were saying that there was a everybody, no matter what service you were on, at least. A lot of the people at the conference that I was at were all saying the same thing, which was, I'm dropping a lot of calls, and I have a lot of static on my line. Now, that's just inconvenient. You know, it wasn't like a plane falling out of the sky. But, you know, it's something
you have I kind of feel sorry for California, because almost every end-of-the-world scenario starts in California. Do you know that?
Well, you know something? Yeah, that's where the movies are made, so they want to self-publicize. You know, it's got all these. And come on. Quite frankly, there's some people out there that probably need to be in some end-of-the-world situations. Those guys are way over the top in some areas. But
And Backlist Home Magazine, you know, on page 8, Claire Wolf wrote an article on, you know, a brief history of the end of the world. It kind of goes through, it's actually a really good article. It's 6 pages. It's 6 pages, and it's very interesting to see some of the scenarios and how they've played out throughout history, you know, and, you know, how the dates keep changing according to, you know, what's coming up, you know. And, you know, talking about polar shifts, for instance, one of the things was polar shifts. And what surprised me is it's actually happened in the past, and I didn't know that. And so they said the reality is it takes, you know, 1,000 to 10,000 years to actually complete that. Of the polar shift. So, yeah, anyway, the article is very good. It's got a lot of stuff in here. It even talks a little bit about the Bible and the Quran, and you know, talks about the secret codes that are in these books that talk about end of the world scenarios. And then, of course, it's also got the galactic alignment. Talks about that one, which is the solstice, you know, the solstice sun, so where everything gets lined up, so that one was a really good article. It talks about the Milky Way in there. It talks about the heavenly bodies aligning in various ways, and then of course, and we've been hearing about this one for years, is this Planet X.
What's Planet X?
So, you know,
wasn't that the one that Godzilla came from?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's so funny to hear these scenarios. That's what was cool about this article, was the fact that they didn't, you know, they didn't take anything seriously. What she did is she wrote the article. She wrote Planet X, and she gave a brief description of Planet X, and then she wrote the claim, and she talks about the claim of what Planet X is going to do, and then she wrote the reality. And that's what I loved about this, is because you know, the claim and the reality a lot of times is misinterpreted, or what's the word here? They use a little bit of fact and twist it to make it sound like you know, doomsday. They twist scientific facts, and she encourages that you go out and research those facts, because she said there is actually a lot of websites out there that are predicting things, but when you look at the facts and if you actually follow up on those facts, and she said sadly that not nearly enough people do it, but if you did follow up on those facts, 90% of them aren't accurate. So.
Well, you know something, I make fun. You know, zombie apocalypse, Planet X. I mean, I've seen the movie American History X. That was good. But you know, I'm a firm believer that you should kind of keep an open mind to everything. You know, I like to joke around and everything else because they seem like they could be completely out of this world. But you know, I am also where I always come from is. I'm a believer in history. You know, it was Winston Churchill that said, those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it, or something like that. Don't quote me on exactly what he said, because I can probably completely mess that up. But I do remember that was Winston Churchill. That's about as much as I got out of my education. And, you know, if you look at history, there's several things that you have to pay attention to, even near-term history. You know, we have at our next show a good friend of ours, Fernando Aguirre, who wrote the books Surviving the Economic Collapse, who in 2001 actually survived the economic collapse of Argentina. And then you have Greece, and then you have things like that. So, you know, people that go, can you really have an economic collapse? Can that do things? Sure, it's happened lots of times before. You look at people that say, you know, can you really have some major disaster that's going to change everything? You know, history, let's just look back in history. You can see, you know, the continents have shifted, you know, all these things that happen. And even these things like when I laugh and say Planet X and things like that, heck, 1600s, you know, people believed that the world was flat and, you know, everything revolved around us, you know. So for me to say there was no Planet X, you know, it would be hypocritical for me to really laugh at people and say that this stuff couldn't happen, because, you know, just several hundred years ago, you know, or even 1,000 years ago, if you go back to biblical times, people would laugh at any of the suggestions that I'd be talking to you over waves and over the internet, and, you know, we'd be communicating with all of you guys and posting pictures on Facebook. Yeah, they would just be, you know, oh, yeah. So who am I to say? Planet X, if you're out there, you know, we'll just have to, you know, we should actually probably do some research on that and see what actually comes up.
The Planet X, you know, she wrote that in the article. She talks about that Planet X, the claim is that it's heading our way, and it will collide with our planet. It's actually a lot larger. I can't remember how big, but it's a lot larger than planet Earth. The reality is, you know, again, that it's not going to happen.
Well, you know something? So, you know, if you have faith, I mean, you know, people always, I was actually in a debate last night. People were talking about, I kind of call them the founders of the feast. You know, we're in a new genre. You know, we're in the prepping, and, you know, there's a lot of people out there that say they started prepping or they did this and they were the first ones to do that. And I kind of look back and I'm like, you know, if you really want to go back, you could either, if you're not a faith-driven person, you could say, well, the original preppers were probably the cavemen. I mean, the whole idea of hunter-gatherer is basically prepping at its basic core. If you are faith-based, I mean, you have, you know, several different stories, including, I mean, heck, you know, Noah's Ark. If that wasn't prepping for an end of the world situation, what is? You know, so yeah, who knows? I mean, a planet hurling at our planet and bouncing off of it. I mean, we're just a relatively small rock out here in the vastness of space. Who knows what's going to happen? But, you know, all we can do is teach you guys to prepare and you know, have a little bit of faith and hope that, you know, that it doesn't happen.
Well, yeah, like I said, I mean, preparation and self-reliance is a lifestyle. And the more you live that lifestyle, the closer you become prepared, the less you're going to be worried about, you know, these end-of-the-world scenarios you know, obviously, you know, I talked a couple of weeks ago when you weren't here, Bubba, about the, you know, the end of the, you know, the, well, the economic collapse. And I talked with, I had a friend, Thrander, who lives in Iceland, And they, you know, they suffered an economic collapse as well. And so I talked with him, and I've talked with Fernando, and you know, we see the things that are going on in Greece, and you know, those scenarios are real and it very well could happen. But if, like I said, if you're prepared, you're not near as worried about it as the person that doesn't have any food storage, doesn't have any way to grow anything, and is living paycheck to paycheck.
So, well, we got to get ready for Linda. Here's my suggestion, people. If you're already not a person who has a subscription to Backwoods Home Magazine, issue 134 is out. Facts and Fiction About Apocalyptic Scenarios. Not only does it have that, which is, you know, it was actually a fantastic articles to read. Claire Wolf did a great job, as Colorado Ron said, and wrote various things. But there's a ton inside there. It's all not gloom and doom. Gloom and Doom is one of our radio shows,
right.
Not to get mixed up with Gloom and Doom. They covered lots of things like, inside that issue. From all those articles the potatoes. The potatoes are really good. Portable solar. I think that was actually about our friends over at Homeless, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Medicinal garlic, homestead burnout. Anyway, great magazine. We'll be talking about it more as things come up. But, you know, again, apocalyptic scenarios is what the cover says is all about. And issue 134 is pretty awesome. We're going to get ready for our new friend, Linda Morehouse. She and her husband, Matt, wrote a book called Cast Iron Cuisine, From Breakfast to Dessert. And What was it, about 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, we were talking about cast iron, and it was actually from an article they wrote. And, I'm finding cast iron is the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I'm real excited to talk to her about this. But she's also an advocate of pasture-fed animals. And I don't even want to go – we'll let her go into that and everything else. But, yeah, we're looking forward to her. We'll be talking to her in 3 minutes. We're going to go to break here one more time so we can do a solid 45 with Linda. And looking forward to talking to her right after this. Let's go to break.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour. And I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance.
For the past 25 years, Sun Ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers@sunoven.com. That's preppers@sunoven.com.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Bubba DaVinci back with Colorado Ron. We are in our final half of the show. We will be talking here in a minute with Linda Morehouse. She's the author of Cast Iron Cuisine with her husband, Matt. We'll be here with you guys every Saturday from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So, Linda, are you on?
Yes, I'm on. Good morning.
Good morning, Linda.
Good
How
morning.
Are you?
I'm great. Couldn't be better. Nice to talk to both of you.
Yes. Thank you so much for getting on so early. Linda is based out of California.
Yeah, where the living is so good.
Yeah, well, as long as you're not living in one of those post-apocalyptic scenarios that we were talking about earlier.
Oh, my golly, no. We're where the green grass grows tall all year long, and I'm here to tell you in praise of grass, and I don't mean the kind you smoke. So that's part of what I want to talk about, because some apocalypses are slow, and we don't see them coming. And it's what happens to our food supply. And you guys, the homesteaders, the small grass farmers, man, you've got it good, and I envy you. So I'm here to tell you why.
Right. Now, Linda, you write for Backwoods Home Magazine and cover a lot of different topics, but lately you've done things on cooking with cast iron, correct?
Well, I've done three articles, the last one in conjunction with my husband, Matt, and they have taken recipes from our Cast Iron Cuisine cookbook and then put a couple more that were not in the cookbook just as a little bonus for people reading the magazine.
Right. And you know, now just kind of off subject for a second, Matt just had a birthday, right?
He did. How did you know?
You know, we do our research. Happy birthday, Matt.
You really do your homework.
We try. We're a family oriented show. We want people to know that we think and we care, and you know, so we make sure that we're covering all the angles there. So
hey,
if Matt's around, let him know
happy
birthday.
You know what you
what
said
that?
Is so important? Think
What's
and
that?
Care. Think and care. That's a theme, and I'm going to talk some more about that. Think and care.
Okay, well, we'll make sure we get back to that. So the,
No, it's thread through this whole discussion. It's why I'm passionate about the subject.
All right, and the subject that we're going to be talking about, well, we're going to cover several subjects with you, and I'm going to start out with the simplest one of them, because it's going to be a good segue, which is, you know, we've got your book, again, which is Cast Iron Cuisine from Breakfast to Dessert, and I posted up on the Facebook page, you know, I am, and I think I admitted to you when we talked last week, Linda, I am a cast iron noob. I have absolutely zero experience with cast iron, and so we've just gotten into it, and you challenged me to try the noble pot roast.
But you know, when I did that, I had forgotten that one of the components is Matt's good stock. And he has a whole chapter in the book on making stock, because this book is as much a cooking school as it is a recipe collection, right? The noble pot roast is a culmination of both aging the beef in the refrigerator so it will be safe, and combining his good stock that it has taken quite a while in the winter to produce. I think you could use a canned stock in a pinch, but I put you down a path there that I have to apologize for. He corrected me. He said, no, without that good stock.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been a good experience so far. I went down and went and got a 7-pound grass-fed roast bone in roast. And if anybody wants to go to Bubba Da Vinci's Facebook page, you'll see I actually have a photograph of the roast the day I purchased it, with the salt and pepper and everything else. And then I took a picture of it this morning with my brand new Dutch oven that's freshly seasoned. Up on my dining room table, because today I'm actually going to cook it. And I was gone for the entire week, so my wife actually had the job of rotating the meat every single day.
Yeah, turning it. Right. You will notice that it will have shrunk about 10% during the course of that aging.
Yeah, and it has. But you know something? I was worried that when I looked at it, it was going to look terrible, but it actually even looks more appetizing. I mean, it's just, it shrunk up a little bit and everything else, but it's, I've accidentally aged meat before, which means I've left them in the refrigerator not thinking about it. And there's a big difference on the look of the meat, of aging meat, when it's grass-fed compared to the stuff that you just get off your shelf at Walmart. I mean, I'm surprised at, and part of that I think is because when you go to a butcher and you get a real piece of meat like this, it doesn't have all the artificial coloring and everything else they put in it in the grocery stores to make it look attractive to you.
Oh, there's a lot of other stuff it doesn't have in there too. It doesn't have growth hormones. It doesn't have antibiotics. It doesn't have fear, adrenaline, norepinephrine, all those things that when we're afraid and we have to say, hey, I'm going to run you over and get out of here, that store in our muscle. And then you know what? We eat that fear in that animal. I want to talk about that a little later.
Right. Well, I love segues. So, you know, we talked about the meat and you know, it being grass-fed. And I got kind of an education from Linda when we talked last time. And I didn't know the difference, and I think I've been fairly, you know, we've been talking about this a lot over the last couple of weeks. You know, I've just moved up from Texas up to Iowa. You know, we're starting chickens this year. We're getting going this weekend on getting our chicken stuff set up. And, you know, my goal with chickens was to do them naturally, you know, building a chicken tractor so that way we can move them around. They can eat the bugs and everything else, and we're not going to use any artificial products to feed them. My family does cattle, and they're all pasture-fed, which means that we let them out in the pasture and we rotate them around and do it that way. And I didn't realize that when we were doing this that we were actually on some sort of trend. And I was talking to Linda, and I was like, she was talking about pasture-fed animals. And I asked her, well, what's the difference between pasture – or two things. What's the difference between organic and pasture-fed animals? And I was surprised with the answer. Can you kind of give us a little bit about that, Linda?
You know, I'd need to lead into that just a little bit more. What I'm saying is, you homesteaders, you grass farmers, you've got it good. Now, I've got a good doctor who just retired from practice. Before he retired, he told me he was seeing a lot of strange complaints coming in, and he attributed it to items in the food supply. He has retired to start some subsistence farming on 5 acres he's got here in Humboldt County so he can control his food. You folks have the capacity to do that. Some of us who are stuck in the city, and we do have a city home here because our 209 acres of recreation property off-grid, the Crow and Bear Ranch that we mention in the book, that's where we go for recreation. We don't live there year-round, but you guys who do live on the land, you can control all of this with what you produce at home. And I want to tell you why that's so important.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Okay. Well, first I have to be full disclosure, and that is the fact that I was not always this keen an advocate, but I had a bout with breast cancer. And when you look at the big C and you look at the possibility of life and death, you start educating yourself about what you can do to keep yourself healthy after the surgery and after the radiation. And so I began reading. It says, don't eat red meat. And I'm saying, wait a minute. Look at my teeth. You know, I come from eons of evolution. I have nippers and rippers and grinders, and my teeth tell me I'm built to eat meat. I don't think it's just the red meat. I think it's what we've done to our meat supply. And so I started investigating. I listened to my brother tell me he had a heart condition, that his heart doctor told him, well, avoid red meat, but if you have an access to wild game, wild venison, wild elk, you know, the real thing, not the farmed kind, right?
Right.
The real thing. Eat that. That's fine. And I said, so I was putting two and two together. I'm saying, what do they have in common? Well, grass-fed, free-range, good life, hopefully a good death. And I started looking at what has happened to our meat supply. I didn't think about it before. I just picked a good cut out of the meat market, you know, what looked good to me. So I started reading on it. And I learned about the growth hormones that's given the animals to hit market weight fast. I read about feedlots and their effects on the animals, the crowded conditions, they're breathing in dust. They have to give them antibiotics because they're keeping them under constrained conditions. That gets passed on in the meat and the food. Things that happen at the slaughter plant, and I don't know how much you want to hear about that, but what it brought me to was a realization that there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way. And I found it. Here in Humboldt County, we have grass year-round, the great luxury of green grass. And there's a man named Mike Evanson at Lost Coast Farms who is doing it right. He's raising his animals as stress-free as he possibly can. He raises them in family groups so he doesn't separate according to size and age. He keeps them on green grass, and when he has to move them from one pasture to the next, he does it on horseback rather than putting them in a truck where they can slip and fall and get bruised and damage the meat. You know, because what we're looking at is the meat supply besides the humane practice. Then, and here's what blew me away when he told me about the half a beef we bought from him. The day that that animal came to slaughter, and it had been raised on this sunny hillside overlooking the ocean, he took his grandson out with him to the field that day, the day that he slaughtered our animal. And he held out a handful of oats, and that steer came toward him, and its last thought was of the oats in his hand. Now, that is a beautiful death. That animal knew no fear, and consequently, we didn't eat the fear in the muscle. All the adrenaline, all the stress hormones, corticosteroids that get built into that meat, when that animal knows it's going to die because it hears the other guys yelling in the feedlot and in the slaughterhouse. So I'm a big advocate of not only grass-fed, but grass-finished and field-slaughtered. I feel that that's very important. You folks who can raise your animal as if it's a member of the family that you're going to eat, because that's the contract, right? Hey, you know, you live here, I grow you, I'm going to eat you, but in the meantime, I'm going to see that you have the best life I can give you, because that's going to be good for me down the line, and the best death I can give you, because again, that's going to be good for me. We're all tied in together. That's the beauty of it. Over to you. I've been chewing this fat a minute. Go ahead.
No. Here's one of the things that when Linda and I were talking about this before, is you can hear the passion in her voice. And passion in this business means a lot. Because, what you find in at least in my, again, in my humble opinion, it's not like I've been doing this very long time, but even in other businesses, you know, people that are passionate about something take the time to do the research. They give you as much information as they have. They usually give it freely because they want to educate. And people who aren't passionate about it, you find is usually a bunch of, excuse the term, BS out there that they just want to, they're regurgitating information, they just throw it out there. So I'd rather have a passionate person anytime than a person who's just trying to pass on you know, information that A, they don't believe in, and B, are just trying to do things. So I appreciate your how passionate you are about it, Linda. I really do.
Well, you know, I also want to give you a website, because it is one of the best agglomerators of this information that I found out there. It is based on scientific articles that mm-hmm. she quotes in the bibliography, but it's written in a very accessible way, and it goes into what's good for the animal, what's good for us, the health of the meat. She gets into other grass-fed issues, which I want to talk about later, the pastured, not only the pastured meat, but the pastured eggs, the pastured butter. Mmm, boy. Anyway, here's the website, eatwild.com. That's E-A-T.
I'm actually posting it for you right now.
Good.
But go ahead. You can go ahead and do it. Yeah, www.eatwild.com.
.com, yes.
Right. And it's being posted on both our Facebook page and our blog talk page.
Excellent. Now, there's a subsection there. Look over on the left where it says animals. And
okay.
Because I want to get, we're talking about stress and meat quality. Effects of stress on meat quality. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm on Purdue. Okay, I'm going back to.
I think are you talking about the healthier animals?
Yes, healthier animals. That's the one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it talks about pasture-based farming enhances animal welfare.
Pasture-based farming enhances animal welfare. Take a look at what they feed those animals in many of the feedlots. At least it's documented in the upper Midwest. Byproduct feedstuffs commonly used in dairy cattle diets in the upper Midwest. Candy, including the wrappers. Bakery wastes, including the wrappers. Potato waste, starch, pasta. That does not sound like a natural diet to me.
No,
dairy cattle.
Right, you're right. This is for dairy. This is, and they do this with a lot of animals to bulk them up very quickly, and it's very inexpensive. There was a report of about a year and a half ago where they were talking about pork production and chicken production, and the number one purchaser of the scrap material from like places like Hershey's and things like that
mm-hmm.
were cattle and chicken farms.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, that's disgusting.
It really is. And did you know that? No, we didn't. They don't tell us that.
There were places that were buying hundreds of tons of the scraps per year to feed them because it's all sugar-based waste materials. The animals don't move around. Imagine if you set a kid in front of a candy jar and didn't let him move around a lot.
Exactly.
You know, all that stuff
gets,
and it just turns into fat.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. And if you are what you eat, then what they eat becomes what we eat. Don't you want the best in you? I do.
Yeah.
I'm finding the best comes from grass. Now, eatwild.com has a subhead called Health Benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And there they talk about CLA and ALA and a couple of other acronyms that I bet you didn't know. But let's take a look right from the top here. Summary of important health benefits for beef, chicken. Okay. Lower in fat than grain-fed animals. And you're right. It says in the last few years they've been looking for ways to increase the amount of marbling. So those animals that are fed that way have less of the good omega-3. They've got more of the bad omega, the bad oils, than they do of the good oils. The omega-3s are what you want to look for. Omega-3s vanish in the feedlot. Take a look down there at that downward trend. The longer the animals spend in the feedlot, the more omega-3 vanishes. This goes for chickens, too. and the eggs from those chickens. And you know what? It also goes to milk and the butter from the milk. But now here's, go just a little farther and look at this information about CLA. This is what really gets me excited. Conjugated linoleic acid and also alpha-linoleic acid, essential fatty acids, that's polyunsaturated fatty acid, essential for our life, contained in grass, green grasses. We can't metabolize it from the grass, but the herbivores do, the ruminants do. And when we eat their meat, we get this. Now, what they've just found out, and this blows me away, is, I mean, here was the answer, here was the key I was looking for, is that they did a big study in Sweden of women who had higher levels of this alpha-linoleic acid, ALA, and also CLA in their blood against women who had lower levels. The women with the lower levels of CLA and ALA had a higher incidence of breast cancer and metastasis from the breast cancer. It's not the original tumor that kills you. It's where it gets loose and goes wild in your body. Mm-hmm. And that, in part, can be prevented, according to what I'm reading, if I have it within my power to do so, I'm sure going to try, by the right kind of diet, by getting the good stuff in us. The more I learn, the more I see that good stuff goes back to grass. Why not? We evolved with it. We've been eating, the animals that have been eating this stuff, for all of our developmental history. Why change it now? We mess things up. Input from you, Bubba.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would agree. I mean, I definitely see the a difference in places. I mean, after we talked, I did a bunch of research, and in countries where most of the animals are completely pasture handled, you see a remarkably lower number of not only cancer situations but also just general health situations. And so, I mean, the proof, it's just like anything. The proof is out there if you want it. The research is just, you know, most people just are into the mass production now. Everybody wants ease, you know. And so I think that's what a lot of this is people have to make the decision whether they want to be healthy or they want things easy.
Yes, yes, indeed. You know, this grass-fed meat tastes like a different animal. Have you ever had a truly grass normal raised chicken? It doesn't taste like your foster farms. It tastes, I have one at my daughter's house. She raises this way. She said, if I'm going to have to eat meat, because she'd been a vegetarian, she says, I want to be responsible for that animal's life and its death. I had one of her chickens for dinner at her house. My gosh, it tasted more like quail or pheasant.
Mm-hmm.
Pasture-raised beef, grass-fed beef, has a flavor that evokes something we've forgotten what heritage beef tastes like. When we first tried our first steak out of this beautiful beef that we got from Mike Evanson at Lost Coast Farms, Matt said, oh, this takes me back to my childhood. This is what it used to taste like when my dad did steak. Did you find that thing in the cookbook about dad's steak?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Just for fun, let me read this to you, because we've tried to make the cookbook readable and fun and honest, coming from our heart. And so here's the whole recipe. And Matt did this, obviously. He said, this is how my father used to barbecue steaks in the backyard when I was a boy. And, of course, he's talking about that kind of heritage beef that tasted that way, right? He would get the charcoal grill glowing red hot, and only then would he go to the freezer and select inch-thick porterhouses or T-bones, which he would throw solidly frozen onto the hottest part of the grill. The fire would roar, splatter, and spit for 3 to 5 minutes before he flipped the steaks to cook for another 3 to 5 minutes. Then he pulled them off the fire, sprinkled on Roquefort or blue cheese, which would melt over the steak, and served them on hot plates. This method produces an excellent rare steak with a nice crust to seal in the juices. Simple, yet quick and effective. And by the way, if you folks are worried about the grilling the meat and possible carcinogens that that produces, because I'm not going to lie to you, it can, a glass of red wine is said, or spinach with the meal, is said to overcome that effect. Just a little sideline I picked up. Over to you,
right.
Bubba.
Okay, and you know something, it's interesting. If you guys get a chance to get the book, and we'll be posting a recipe that that Linda gave us earlier or yesterday to go ahead and do it. The book is written in a very interesting method, which, just like she did, every section has kind of a story kind of leading into it, which actually makes it fun. When I was going there and looking at doing the pot roast, you know, she does the same, they do the same thing and then talk about, you know, everybody loved it but the kids.
one little girl who at that age was only eating noodles.
Right, only
she
eating
said,
noodles.
Because it wasn't noodles.
Which sounds like one of mine. But
she grew out of it. Now she's saying yummy.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, you know, the book, when you're eating wild, you know, there's these are animals that have not just stood around and done nothing for their entire lives. They're out there living their lives as they're supposed to. And so sometimes the meat can be a little tougher when you do it. And they give you solutions on how to handle that. And they recommend so many different things. Like I'm looking forward to trying, you know, there's like the medallions of venison and, you know, your deer liver.
Yeah, Matt insists that I cook the deer liver, but any liver, calf liver will do. And that's another thing. If you're doing home field slaughter, you've got that fresh liver right there. And the deer liver recipe goes just as well for your fine beef liver.
Yeah, and I look forward to that because you mentioned all kinds of things that you can substitute inside here. So this goes well beyond, you know, people go, oh, I'm a prepper, preppers, a lot of the preppers are hunters, and this cookbook definitely goes out there for everybody. So I have a question.
Oh, yes, Matt.
On the segue back, is, you know, you were talking about, you know, the grass-fed animals, pasture-fed grass-fed animals. You know, one of the things that Eat Wild had that I appreciated is it is difficult, if you're not someone that has land that's able to do this, the question always comes up: Where do you find this sort
of
animal?
Well, but that's why I like that source, because they've got a map there, and you click on your state, and then they give you all the people in your area who are producing it this way.
Right, and
not all are doing field slaughter. I do have to put that in there, and I do. This is just personal disclaimer, right? But this is just mm-hmm. Linda Morehouse speaking. I feel the field slaughter is an important part of it. And some of those folks are doing it the way Mike Evanson does. I feel that that's the final touch. Because why go through all this trouble raising these beautiful grass-fed animals and then send them off in a truck where they can fall down and get injured, send them to maybe they'd have to be in a holding pen for a few days until their time comes, and they hear the other vocalizations of the other animals, and they say, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Why do that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right now we're negotiating for a grass-fed pig, a Tamworth, which is an ancient English breed, that the daughter of the Alexander kids that have eco dairy farms out of Crescent City and are doing wonderful pasture-based beef and eggs, and she is raising these Tamworths as her FFA project. So we're trying to talk a friend into going in halves with us. We don't need the whole pig. But I want to see a field slaughter. So I'm trying to arrange to have our local portable, the mobile slaughter, the British call them a knacker, who comes out and does the kill in your field if you are not up to doing it yourself. And then he trucks it to the meat market. And I'm arranging for that right now.
Very cool. I was very surprised when I'll put the link up here in a second. I was incredibly surprised when I actually clicked on the link to find out there were some almost 30 vendors in Iowa that handled everything from the beef to chicken to everything. So, I mean, Hey, Linda, we're going to take a few seconds. We need to take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll keep this conversation. So, guys, we're going to do a break, and we will be back in 3 minutes.
I'll hang around.
All right.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to the show. This is Bubba Da Vinci with Colorado Ron, and we are speaking with Linda Morehouse. She is the author of Cast Iron Cuisine, From Breakfast to Dessert. Linda, so when we left a few minutes ago, we were talking about the different areas that you can go ahead and you can get this. So, I'm surprised at how easily accessible this is for people, and I'm surprised why more people don't do it.
Well, maybe they don't know. And there's another thing that's also easily accessible, and that's the right kind of eggs. Now, can I talk for a minute about eggs?
Please do.
Can I?
Yes, you may.
Okay. We're talking pastured eggs here. It's not organic. Organic isn't good enough. It's got to be pastured eggs.
Before you get into eggs, let's cover that. Because there's three main things I want to make sure the people here understand. What is the difference between pastured eggs and organic, or pastured versus organic, period?
Okay. I was headed there. There's a large egg producer here in California that produces what they call organic cage-free eggs under a number of different labels, but it all goes back to this one. When they say cage-free, I got some information from a website called cornucopia.org. If you could post that, please.
Yep, it's going up right now.
Okay, on cornucopia.org, look at the egg scorecard. Got it?
Yep, we're good.
Okay. This large producer, which I probably should let remain nameless, it turns out the cage-free means that they're not in a tiny wire cage. They can get down on the ground. But the entire thing, it's a warehouse, and that whole building is the cage, because those girls never get out into the sunlight. They never get to scratch around out there in the grass and find the insects and do all the things the chickens do. So, but they're still called organic. What's that about? So I look for pastured eggs, especially if they have a picture of a chicken tractor on the cover, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you talk about the chicken tractor. Would you tell us a little bit about that, Bubba?
Well, a chicken tractor is just a chicken coop that is mobile, that you're able to actually move it around, so that way that not only are the chickens scratching in different areas and picking up bugs and everything else with it, and plant life, so it can remain natural, but you're actually allowing them to use their droppings to get on the ground. So it basically keeps the evolution of how things work properly balanced.
Yeah, exactly, the way it always has. Now, why should we bother about that? Okay, standard factory farm eggs. Let's compare them with eggs from hens raised on pasture. I'm getting this information from a nice little graphic done by Mother Earth News, who is based it upon, and they have the scientific research, they can quote you, the studies, based it on comparative laboratory samples of these two types of eggs, right? And then they averaged for these results. So, eggs raised from hens raised on pasture have 7 times more beta-carotene, 2/3 more vitamin A, 3 times more vitamin E, 2 times more omega-3s, that's the good omega, and less of the bad stuff. 1/3 less cholesterol, 1/4 less saturated fat. So, an egg is not an egg is not an egg. Eggs are different. On the inside, I make an egg sandwich for breakfast with Matt's good homemade bread, his city bread that's actually in the cookbook as well. He put sesame seeds on this last one. And I make an egg sandwich with one of those eggs that I get from a pastured hen. Sometimes it's a double yolk. That yolk sits up. It's a true hemisphere. It's a globe, and it's almost orange. And the white hangs up right around the yolk. It doesn't spread all out flat. And actually then what I do is I scramble it in the pan, because then I get my good pastured butter into that egg. And I put that on his homemade bread, and it's so darn good.
Now, I've gone ahead and put up the article so people can see it. Welcome to the Chicken and Egg page for Mother Earth News, which if you haven't gone there, they've got a YouTube video that actually shows the difference between free-range pastured. And I always make the mistake when I'm talking. This week I've been talking about this, and I keep saying pasteurized. And every time I do it, I crack up, because when I did that with Linda the first time I met her, I go, you know those darn pasteurized chickens? And yeah, they're not pasteurized. They're pastured, organic eggs. If you guys are going to the store and asking for pasteurized chicken, you can blame me. All right, because I keep doing it over and over and over again. But you know, if you are eating healthy, again, go to this page and look at it, and the link is up on both our Facebook page and our thing. 1/3 less cholesterol, 1/4 less saturated fats, 2/3 more vitamin A, 2 times more omega-3 fatty acids, 3 times more vitamin E, 7 times more beta-carotene. I mean, I don't have to buy my multivitamin.
Because that's what the chicken ate, right? And now we get it. What you are is what you eat. And that egg is the life of the chicken. The chicken is going to pass on to its offspring the very best it's got in it. Well, that's the egg. Get the best.
It's an amazing, and this is what I love, guys. And I Colorado Ron and I first started talking about this, Linda, when we first got together and started talking about doing this stuff. The amount of information that one person can get, I could spend probably 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the rest of my life, and maybe have never hit this information. And it's the reason why we're doing this show, is because, as a community, we help teach each other. right? Yeah. And we there's so much information out there and so many places that you need to look and so much things that you need to find that no one person can ever be an expert in all this stuff and actually have the information. And, you know, thank God we have people like you that have a passion about something that can bring this up there. It was in Mother Earth News. I read that magazine and look at their website fairly often, but I'd never seen this page. I had never seen this page until you sent me the link. And it's like, wow, how could I have missed this? But then I looked on there, and they post up 72 pages a day of new information.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
You get all that.
Of course, of course. Now, if you're wondering where to get these, if you can't raise chickens that way in your backyard, maybe you've got a neighbor who does. Watch for the little guy with a sign out, eggs for sale. I guarantee you those are going to be better than anything except pastured eggs that you can buy in the market. And the folks are there. If you can't keep chickens yourself, buy it from somebody who does. Or look at one of the sources in cornucopia.org where they give you the scorecard on eggs and who's producing them. I suspect that in your state is probably going to be one of their top rated. They give it 5 eggs, and then they go down the scorecard, you know, all the way down to 0 eggs. And that big, quote, organic, unquote, producer here in California shows up down in that list of 0 eggs because they're not pastured. They can't get out enough. They can't be a real chicken. And here's the thing. You've got to look at your animal and say, okay, what is this animal? My cow is a ruminant, and it eats grass, and it stays with its family. And watch the animal. Let the animal be the animal itself, and you're going to reap the rewards.
Right. Now, we have about 10 minutes left, Linda, to go ahead and go through some of this stuff. So I want to make sure we get to something. What pasture-fed butter.
Yeah, butter. I was just going to say butter.
Yeah.
Okay. You wouldn't believe the difference in flavor, the difference even in aroma. It's darker than the ordinary. Don't buy the cheapest butter you can find. Look for pastured butter and buy it when it costs less, which would probably be in the spring, and freeze it. I just bought 5 pounds. I got it in the freezer. But one of those pounds, I went ahead and I clarified because the harmful part of butter is the milk solids, the casein.
Mm-hmm.
You can get rid of that by the proper method of clarifying your butter. You take that beautiful clarified butter and you put that with one of those pastured eggs on some home-baked bread, and you have something divine. I wish I could convey to you the flavor difference.
So I have 2 questions on it before you jump into that. So where do you get pasture? And again, not pasteurized butter.
Not pasteurized. No, it will say pastured butter on it. It may say organic, but it will also say pastured. Now, what this means is the dairy cows have been out eating the green grass. This brings you more vitamin A and more CLA that comes across in the butter. There's a difference in quality of the butter from dairy cows that have been fed that kind of expletive deleted you were listing that we saw on the Eat Wild site, and
mm-hmm.
those that are out there eating the grass that they were built to have. You get those benefits. Buy it in the spring when it's more economical. Freeze it. But before you use it, take the trouble to clarify it. Can you post that link about whole9life.org? That has a good video tutorial on the best way to clarify butter. Because to properly clarify, I always thought, well, you just heat it and skim off the milk solids. There's a little more to it than that. And that video tutorial, if you can understand the lady's Swedish accent, will give you the best steps. Just watch what she does if you can't make out what she's saying. It'll give you the best way to produce this clarified butter. And keep it in the refrigerator, covered, maybe in a glass jar or something that is not going to get any refrigerator smells on it.
Right.
It will keep for quite a while that way.
And I
hope
Go ahead, Linda.
The difference in flavor is worth the trouble, believe me. We just gave some, we had a friend come in yesterday, and he can be hypoglycemic. He was having a sugar dump, and he had to eat something right now. So we toasted a piece of the good homemade bread, and I slathered on about a teaspoon of that clarified butter because I knew it was going to be helpful for him. It's all it had was the calories, right? It didn't have the bad stuff, the artery clogging. He rolled his eyes, and he says, oh, my gosh. So try it.
Right. Definitely do. I posted that link also, guys, in both the Facebook and the blog page, and I also tweeted that out. It's again, an interesting article. I haven't found the butter yet, but I'm looking forward to it. But it's got a great video that I watched yesterday on how to clarify your butter and a cooking tutorial. And I had no idea what clarifying the butter it was until I saw this. And in Colorado Ron, if you have a chance to watch the video, it's amazing the difference in the look when you do it. I mean, it even looks just amazing.
And that butter is dark.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out after this, yeah.
It's a darker yellow, which means the beta-carotene and all the good stuff.
Yeah. Now, be aware, guys, that there is going to be a lot that is taken out when you do it. 2 pounds of clarified butter is basically yields about two-thirds of a cup of solid. So you're basically taking one-third of your total weight out when you do it. But according to this, it stores better and the taste will remain a lot longer than actually just storing the butter itself in the freezer.
And it's much more helpful. It's much more helpful for you. In India, they make something they call ghee, G-H-E-E, which is clarified butter. Mm-hmm. You've eaten ghee?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, lucky you. I haven't. I'd love to taste it.
Yes, I've actually spent a little bit of time in India.
Oh, so you know that the reason that they do that is for the health benefits.
Actually, I didn't. I just Colorado and Ron and I have a habit of just eating for the sake of eating. But we don't actually ask about the health benefits of most things. If it looks yummy, I think we both take the chance.
Hey, that's what I used to do before I got the breast cancer. Just eat what looks good, you know, gummy bears, anything. But it makes a believer out of you when you're looking at your own mortality for the first time and you're saying, how can I stay here a little longer because what I have is so darn good.
Right. Okay, well, we have about 4 minutes to wrap up, and I want to make sure that we get all of your information out there. Is there anything else that you want to, I'm sure there's a ton. We could probably spend 2 days on these topics. But I wanted to make sure that we got everything out that you wanted to discuss on the website.
We talked about meat and eggs and butter, and I gave you some links to find your own, and we talked about the importance of why to do it. And I think what I would, again, say, let that animal be itself. Let it be free to make choices among its natural food sources. Let it be free to move around in the sunlight. Let it be free to have a social life. Keep it close to the grass as long as possible. And then when it comes time to harvest that animal, thank it and give it a fear-free death at home if you can. And that meat and that milk and those eggs are going to be healthier, and so will you, in your body and in your spirit.
Very good. So let's end by talking about your cookbook one last time. So I will give you an update, Linda, on Monday and tell you how my roast came out because I was able to do everything on it but the stock. And I read, and now I'm all into stock, and I've got to sit down with my family and tell them I'm buying stock pots. But here's one thing that I think that's very interesting. Linda and Matt's book. So Matt's a hunter, and Linda loves and lives this lifestyle. This book is not just a cookbook. It's a person. It's almost like you're sitting down with a bunch of friends and chatting about stories over a good meal, and it gets you salivating as you go because almost every section of it, they don't tell you why they just did something. It's kind of like there's a little story that kind of goes along with it, and they give you different mm-hmm. variations and things like that. But you're also very big in here about emphasizing you know, doing as much of the process yourself as you possibly can. And that's, you know, using canned foods, you know, using healthier things, making your own stock. Linda, I never thought about saving the extra fat from some of my animals like deer to do stock or to have the extra fat inside there for seasoning your pans and getting things ready. That's brilliant.
And your chicken fat, too, that you cut off, you can make some wonderful dog biscuits with that chicken fat.
I guess, in a sense, you know, this book isn't rocket science in the sense that you guys have invented the wheel. You're just basically going back and looking and saying, these are things that have been done for years. We just kind of forgot to do them any longer. Mm-hmm. It's easier to go buy a can of stock than just do it yourself when you've got the product there.
Mm-hmm. Plus the savings, you get the better flavor, and then you get less salt, and you know what's in it. But you're using up something that otherwise would have been discarded. Why buy it in a can?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, and I hate to say it, you know, I'm kind of the same way. Colorado Ron, he does hunt, but he's not like a an avid hunter. Would that be accurate, Ron?
What's that? Say that again?
I said, you've hunted, but you're not an avid hunter.
That's correct, yeah. I have hunted in the past, and I do, but not an avid hunter.
Right. So, for someone like Colorado Ron, I don't think he would be someone that necessarily is going out there and rendering his stock, creating stock and everything else from what's left of the animals. But out here, we don't even think about that. And one of the things you talked about when you're talking about making stock is cutting the bones up, like even for the cattle, and making sure you're using the marrow and everything when you're creating it to get the flavor. And it's amazing because I travel all over the world and a lot in Southeast Asia, and that's actually fairly common thing that they do there. And they actually have meals where they actually will cut up the bones and you actually pull the marrow out with a straw and mix it in with your meal as you do it, because that's where all the health benefits are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has lots of flavor and does that. Where did you guys? I mean, when you guys were coming up with your stock recipes, what made you guys go that direction?
That's Matt. That's what he does. That's a big part. That's what he does in the winter. He has a huge stock pot with a spigot. That makes it easier if you can find one of those. And we do tell in the cookbook sources for everything, but it'll take several days to reduce down. To finally, he takes some and reduces it to the ultimate essence that he calls a beef bullet, and those he freezes. And when he really wants to please me over a lamb chop or something, he'll use one of those beef bullets, and oh my gosh, with a little bit of clarified butter, it don't get no better.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot to get done. Now I'm going to have to go out today and start looking for places to do this. I want to warn everybody that this isn't, like we talked about, this is a healthier way to eat and live. The chickens, if you don't know someone or you can do it yourself, it's not expensive, I'm finding, to have the chickens and do the eggs and everything else. And I definitely think you'll find that there is definitely a flavor there. But when it comes to the beef, be aware that you are going to pay a little bit more for your beef by eating this way. But just what I've already eaten and the stuff that I've already done, I will tell you, I guarantee you will find it worthwhile, and you will never think back once you've done this.
It is a different animal. It's true.
It is definitely a different cut of meat, and you can definitely taste it when you do it. It was a fantastic experience, and I can't wait to cut into this roast tomorrow. And I'm sure it'll be super exciting.
Julia would have said, bon appetit.
Thank you. All right. So we're going to sit here and jump to another break and then end up this show. Again, we've been talking to Linda Morehouse. She's the author of Cast Iron Cuisine, From Breakfast to Dessert. Thank you very much for your time and your wisdom, Linda.
thank you for letting me appear. At first when they asked me, I said, I don't have anything to talk about. And then I looked at how I live, and I said, yes, I do, and I'm passionate about it. And it's been wonderful to have a chance to share that with you guys.
Well, and hopefully we'll be able to get you on here again in the future, and we can pick up where we left off, and by then maybe we'll have Colorado Ron converted, and I'll be completely converted down to completely pasture animals, not pasteurized animals.
Yeah, and pastured butter and pastured eggs.
There you go.
Okay.
All right, so thanks for having us, Lisa.
Bye. Thank you.
All right, guys, let's take a break, and we'll be back in 4 minutes, and we will wrap up the show and talk about a few things before we get going. So thank you.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
Well, I hope not.
Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Well, welcome back. I'm Colorado Ron. I'm here with Bubba DaVinci, and we're back with our Backwoods Home Magazine Self-Reliance Exposed radio show. We're about ready to wind it down here. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show, and wanted to, I don't know, what do we want to do?
Well, I mean,
what do we want to do, Bubba?
Yeah, we could definitely go on and on and on with our hosts, and yeah, the information that we get from everybody is pretty incredible. But yeah, the one thing that we don't get to do after each one is talk about it. And so I find Linda a fascinating person. It's kind of a heavy topic though. I mean, you know, look at things and you're kind of, and I grew up, you know, killing animals and everything else. And, you know, one of the comments that she made that we were chatting back and forth about earlier is like, you know, eating, what was it? Eating the fear.
Oh yes. Eating the fear. Yeah. I was a little shocked with that one. I never thought about that actually until she pointed that out. I don't know, but that seems a little, I don't know what to say about that. Eating the fear. So she's saying that if the animal is scared, it goes into the meat. Is that right?
Well, and you know, something.
You're eating that.
Right. Well, if you think about it theoretically, we can look at this from a couple different angles, which is, you know, if you've ever gone, when you go and you hunt, you know, everybody's ultimate goal is to get a clean shot where you drop them fairly quickly. And if you've ever had to go chase down an animal that you've accidentally wounded and chase them down and everything else, you definitely, the meat can definitely be tougher. And her, I think one of the points that she's trying to make is, an animal that you've constantly raised and you've had around there and everything else, and you've gone out there and they don't have that fear because it was quick and they didn't know what happened, it doesn't build up all that adrenaline and all that extra chemicals. You know, even us, we're creatures of habit. When you're afraid, your body fills up with all these hormones and adrenaline and everything else that gets pumped out because you have that fight or flight instinct, right? All that stuff happens. And
yeah.
That's got to end up somewhere.
Yeah,
and
no, that's
where it
yeah.
ends up in the meat. Yep. So if an animal, if you go to a place that takes the animals up and they live this very comfortable lifestyle, pasture out and everything else, and a person comes up and then just bang, and they're gone, there's no chance for all those extra hormones and adrenaline to get into the meat because they didn't even know it was coming. Yeah.
Well, that's a
and like we talked about before, you know, when we're talking to people like Linda, it doesn't mean that we necessarily subscribe to everything that they say. What we're here to do is present and we don't expect you after you hear from them or hear from us to subscribe for everything that they say. What we'd like to hopefully have is to have an audience that is open-minded and listens and will try different things. Because I'll tell you what, 100% honestly, until I started eating, you know, pasture-raised eggs, you know, there's definitely a difference, and I will never buy an egg at a Walmart again. I mean, there's so much different, including you can see it when you crack the egg in the color and everything. It's so amazing on the taste. I haven't done the butter yet, but I'm looking forward to the butter. And I have done the meat, and I'm getting ready to do this roast today, and I'm pretty excited to see what it tastes like because it even looks different, Colorado. I mean, it just looks different. Now, that doesn't mean I won't go and buy a big steak at some place. You know, I love meat. So it doesn't mean that I'll stop going to restaurants. But I definitely think it'll change my habits as far as purchasing things like that and doing things like that. Did you get a chance to look at the cookbook?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I have the cookbook here, and my wife and I, we go through this, I don't know, pretty much every day until I went out of town, going through this and looking at different recipes and trying those. My wife, she's, you know, obviously we've been cooking in cast iron for a while, but, you know, the things that she brings up in here, that's the little tidbits that make the book very interesting is the added stuff, not just the recipe. This is just not a recipe book, which was really cool. So,
right. Yeah. I think I'm going to go through a lot of these. I'm pretty excited because, I mean, some of this stuff is even things that I can't ruin. So, I mean, well, I say that now, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's the case. Yeah. And this morning we didn't get a chance to talk about it. I'm sorry?
Do you like deer liver?
Actually, I like liver. I do.
Really?
I'm one of those freaks that it wasn't because I was trying to be some manly man or I was just, you know, it was before I was even into the prepping lifestyle. I've never been a waster of pretty much anything. I mean, when I'll cook up the hearts, I'll cook up the liver. Even on birds sometimes, if it's not a wild bird that has a lot of stuff in its gizzard, I'll clean up the gizzards and eat the gizzards. I really enjoy the different flavors, and it's a lot different on wild animals than it is on stuff that you get in the store. There's definitely more of an irony taste. It's very strong. If you cook it up with certain things, it's yummy. It's definitely yummy. I love that stuff. So,
what I noticed is, you know, like I have a brother that, you know, he's always eaten just store-bought food and store-bought meats. And he doesn't like it when I bust out a deer steak. He didn't like it. But what he did do is there was a time when he wanted to go hunting. And I said, all right, let's go. And he'd never been before, so he bagged his first deer, And we butchered it up, and I gave him all the meat, and he's like, well, I wanted to go hunting with you, but I was more for, your family to have the meat. And I was like, no, you got to try it. I said, look, try different recipes. Now he can't stand store-bought meat. It's kind of like going from, eating hamburgers in McDonald's every day and then starting to drink green drinks. It tastes nasty at first, but then you get used to it. And then before you realize it, your body goes back to recognizing it and craving it. And so then you want it more. That's what I've noticed.
Well, no, and guys, if there's nothing else that you got from today, I mean, we don't specifically, because neither one of us are highbrow enough to actually plan anything. So it wasn't necessarily planned today that a lot of the topics had the same theme going through it. But if you didn't notice, there was a theme that went through both conversations with Scott Williams and with Linda Morehouse, which is it's becoming increasingly more difficult to define what out there is natural and healthy for you and what things are not. On the seed side, we were talking about the difference between hybrid and GMO, and how difficult it is to distinguish, because the government doesn't feel it's necessary to list which products necessarily have been altered for as hybrids and which ones are genetically altered. I was a typical, probably suburbanite shopper, green shopper initially when I started getting into this prepping lifestyle, in which I started looking at organic. And, it was an eye-opening thing for me to find out that there was a difference between organic and pasture, grown products. Because
right.
You go to these shows, you go to these farmers markets and everything else. I mean, do you guys have – do you ever go to a farmers market, Ron?
Oh, yeah. We go every weekend when they have them. They do them here every Thursday morning, so during the summer. So we go. Absolutely.
So, yeah, here – this would be an interesting challenge. I don't know, because when you – and it's – now I look back and I realize how stupid the thought process is, but I've always been one of those people that it's like, ooh, I'm going to the farmer's market, therefore I'm eating healthier. Now the only thing I guess is because now that I'm looking at it, it's like, well, how do I know? I guess you have to ask the question. It's like, okay, it's organic. Okay, so that means that there was no chemicals used, there was no this, there was no that. How do I know that it wasn't a hybrid variety or a genetic altered variety that they planted? They still didn't use chemicals, right? So would that would that classify it as organic? Could they stand there and look at me and say, this is an organic fruit, vegetable, whatever, or organically raised chickens? Okay, well, that just means that they're not in one of these giant feeding lots and everything else, but they could still be eating candy.
The thing I've realized is, like you said, the more I learn, the more I feel like I just need to do it all myself, just because you just don't know what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, and that's kind of why you and I, when we talked about this, we came up with Self-Reliance Exposed, because, listen, I am the last person out there to say I know anything for sure. And we talk to our hosts, like Linda, our guests, Linda and Scott, well in advance. And then what we do is we do research. And again, this is just another source of information. And just after talking to Linda, there was 12 links that I got to major sites like Eat Wild, and they went to 12 more. And all of these, they show scientific information and all this other stuff. And quite frankly, anybody can do that. I can put up a site with a bunch of scientific information yesterday done from my scientific lab down in my basement, my 50-year-old chemistry set, and post it there. And you're basically taking the person's word for it or the company's word for it. But you know, then like I said, I'm a history kind of guy. Then you look back at it and you say, well, what, you know, there's got to be some basis for the reason why, things were done a different way, you know, back then. And this, it can't be any healthier. I mean, when you're looking at this stuff, it just looks horrible. So, I mean, I'm glad that we're able to go out there and get this additional information out to people. And hopefully everybody learns something from it. I guess I agree with you at some point that it's almost where you have to do a lot of it yourself. So, one of the things that I think that we need to kind of go make sure that we do for people is that we go out there and get them as much of the information as we can on the website. And we're trying to do a better job, guys. As we talk to these people, we post them on a regular basis. And as we do that, you know, we also try to post it on the Facebook page and everything else. But very soon, we will be launching a new website. It's supposed to be done in about 2 weeks. And what's going to basically be happening is we're going to try to move everybody from actually logging on to Blog Talk over to logging on to the website. And why will that be beneficial? It's because each one of our shows, not just our show, but all the shows on PRN, will have their own individual page where we can actually post up the articles and have all the information there that we do and we get from the shows up in one central location. And that should make it much, much easier for everybody, not only to get the information when we're on here, but also for everybody to go back and look at the information in the past. Because, you know, I'm not even sure how long the stuff gets stored. Do you have any idea? I don't know, Ron. Do you know how long these links stay live up on Blog Talk?
I don't.
Okay. I mean, go ahead.
How about Steve knows?
Yeah, they, Scott, they go into archives. They're there indefinitely, so.
Ooh, good to go. There's the magical Steve. He's the voice that magically appears every once in a while and just starts speaking. He's our show producer / board op. So I'm actually going to talk to Steve now, the mystical man behind the curtain. Hey, Steve, you actually said that you don't like liver either.
No. Give me a good steak any day, but no, sir, no liver for me.
Okay. Well, so I know what I'm going to serve next time we have people over for dinner. That would give you, if you want to make sure people don't come back, serve them liver. So anyway, you know, I think this is good information. I mean, Ron, just out of curiosity, how close do you think you are to like eating healthy? I mean, as far as the organic and kept covering things yourself and everything else. I mean, are you 50% there, 70% there?
Well, I would say that we are, subtracting my travel when I go out of town, we are getting about 75% there. And the reason why is because, you know, we've been gardening for a while, so my wife does a lot of canning, and I have in the backyard a big pile of wood where we're starting to build our chicken coop again. So we're going to have, you know, the chickens there. We're going to, I'm also looking at raising rabbits in our backyard so that we have a meat source. I would say that we're getting pretty doggone close. You know, matter of fact, we're sitting here during the show this morning when we first started, and I was drinking my, you know, my Inner Health green drink that I drink every morning. So I feel like I'm getting healthier in my choices. And when I do go out, I actually get sick now when I go out to eat. If I eat too much fast food or any fast food actually, but if I eat too much out to eat at restaurants and stuff like that, I get sick. I can handle it for about a day, and after that, I'm just sick.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, right now, we're probably only at about 20 to 30%, although we're moving that direction very quickly. This year we're doing chicken, and I think that's going to be a good experience overall. I'm going to attempt a rather nice and large garden across the street for the second time. Hopefully I'll actually get some yield. If not, then I'm actually just going to pay Scott to fly out here and actually do it for me, and I'll just take it. Because it's a huge waste, the way that I obviously garden.
And it's a lot of time. I mean, I talk to some of my friends, and the ones that don't have very successful gardens, he's like, you realize how much vegetables I could have bought by the time I paid for the raised beds and, paid for bringing all the manure in and all the, not to mention all my time and this, the irrigation, the drip systems that I put in there and all the, they get all these fancy things, but they didn't do any of the research, and like Scott was saying, they just go in there and, just start planting or just planting without planning. And, it doesn't work that way sometimes.
Well, and I'm sure there's a percentage of the people that are listening to the show or download the show that are probably the same way. I think that's the biggest challenge, at least for me, as a new prepper, which is we live in an instant society, and we've grown up and gotten so used to everything being easy that a majority of us don't realize that you do have to plan. And you really have to. I mean, how difficult is it to plan a meal nowadays? I mean, everything's in a package. You just throw it in the microwave or cook it in the. It's like I've had to run to the store more often since I've been prepping because of the lack of things that I didn't know I needed to have than ever before in my life. I would have thought I would have told people I'm relatively organized. I get things done very quickly. Well, I can in a modern society where everything's there for you and all you have to do is add water. But, when you actually have to think about, we need to put manure. Well, I put manure in my garden. I didn't realize you had to till it in. I mean, it's okay. Pop it on. All right, stick the seeds in. Come back a month later or 2 months later. It's like, where's my food?
Do you know what I had for breakfast? And not to rub it in, but do you know what I had for breakfast yesterday?
No, what did you have for breakfast yesterday?
All right. My wife made the cracked wheat pancakes. They're like a whole wheat. She grinds it up. And anyway, they're really good pancakes, right? But instead of doing the traditional syrup that we buy at the store, we broke out a jar of the apple butter that we made at the expo. And
I still have one jar left.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, it was so good. Just pouring a warm apple butter right over the pancakes. Oh, it was delish. And it was fairly healthy, which can't go wrong with that.
Well, and I think that's, again, we've joked around several times that it's an evolution, not a revolution. It takes some time to kind of get into this and do it. It was a lot more difficult for me to find the piece of meat than just running to the local Walmart and going and doing it that way. Well worth it, or I'm believing it's going to be well worth it, but it's not necessarily going to be an easy situation. And, we hope that as we grow this and we get the new website up and we keep growing the show, that we'll be getting, feedback in from the different people who are actually trying these things and let us know what they experience also. Because, again, this is a learning experience. We want to do it with you and kind of grow the business and everything else and see what's going on. So let's talk about next week. So this next week will be our second show, same time. Hopefully Colorado Ron will start getting into the groove a little bit earlier.
I'll start working on that this week. I'll start waking up earlier, I promise.
Right. So next week we're going to have as our guest Jeff Yago, who is a licensed professional engineer and a certified energy manager with more than 30 years experience in the energy conservation field. This guy's done extensive solar photovoltaic and energy preparedness things. He's got tons of experience, and he's authored numerous articles for different groups and everything else. Well, and Backwoods Home. He's written a number of articles for Backwoods Home magazine also. We'll post the links here in a second for Backwoods Home magazine and some of the stuff that he's done. He's also has a section in the Backwoods Home magazine blog, which is www.backwoodshome.com/blogs/energy questions. So you can ask him questions, and he's always out there to do things. And if you want to check out his website ahead of time, it's www.dtisolar.com, dtisolar.com. And I'm actually looking forward to having him on there. The one thing that's wrong. The one thing I haven't really gotten down to is my solar planning. But I'll be honest, guys, my food storage looks horrible. My water storage looks worse. And as we've already established, my garden is non-existent. So I guess, you know, the sad thing is every time I do this show and every time we talk about it, I realize how much further behind I actually am than I need to be. So, yeah, if anybody's is in the market to become a show host, maybe I should turn this over to someone else because I'm pathetic when it comes to being prepared.
That's the whole reason we started this show, though, so that we can learn and develop. You know, you're more prepared today than you were the first time we started the show.
No, that's true. That's true. And you know, actually, we're getting together next month to do some canning over at one of the LDS canning facilities and to go see the initiation or groundbreaking of the new cathedral, correct?
It's an open house for the Kansas City Temple there. They've invited us down, and then we also get to go canning at the cannery there, so that'll be pretty fun.
Yeah, so this is going to be my first experience actually canning in number 10 cans to do some of our food storage. And so we should actually videotape that so everybody can
get
that out. Because, I mean, there's nothing more attractive than Bubba Da Vinci in a hairnet and plastic gloves. I mean, I'm a handsome man, but I'll be even more handsome with the hairnet. I'll tell you that. So maybe we'll have to do that.
Okay, yeah, we'll have to post up some clips on that one.
So again, next week we're proud to have Jeff that will be on the show, and I think that'll be a fantastic show because I think a lot of things that people are always concerned about is solar, is what to do to make sure that they're getting a little more efficient, or what to do when there's a complete loss of power. So I'm sure we'll have lots of questions from him.
Absolutely.
And then we actually haven't found the second guest for next week yet. We've got several that we're talking to. You know who I think would be interesting to add as a second guest? And I can actually, it's who we talked about earlier this morning. Let's call Lisa. Yeah, Lisa. She'll do it. She'll do anything. That's the old Mikey commercial, remember? Let's get Mikey. I think she'd be fantastic because she has her book coming out next week, right?
Yeah, she does. Well, yeah, Tuesday.
Book. Yeah, so, I mean, so the book will have just come out, and maybe we can get her on to talk a little bit about what she's got in the book. So, all right, guys, you've heard it here first. You know, we'll have Lisa Bedford on next week, and if we don't, you can blame me, and we'll tell you who we're going to have afterwards. We'll talk to Survival Mom, too. Hopefully next week we're going to have a huge announcement about an additional keynote spot at our event. I'm really excited about it. We have a couple things that we've got to close out real quick before we can make that final announcement. But I think this will be innovative. I think what we're going to be doing is for both the Backwoods Home people and for the people in general who follow the prepping community, I think this is going to be huge. I think this will be good stuff.
Yep.
So,
I agree.
All right, well, let's do all the identification so that way we can go ahead and you can go back to sleep and I can get started with my day because it's already half over. So, sorry, I had to do that. So we want to thank Linda Morehouse for being one of our guests, Linda Morehouse and Matt are the authors of Cast Iron Cuisine, From Breakfast to Desserts. And you can pick up that book at Backwoods Home Magazine /store. Their book is available there at the Backwoods Home Magazine store. We also would like to thank Scott. And what's Scott's email address? I mean, web address?
Down to Earth. Down to Earth Seeds.
Right. www.downtoearthseeds.com. And remember, we have the blowout special. Our guests can buy a one-year kit, $210, and have the opportunity to buy the basic kit for $47. It's normally $97, and you'll be getting basically 3 1-gallon cans crammed with 64 varieties of heirloom seeds and 27 varieties in the basic kit. Additionally, and actually he didn't say this, you actually get his big book on how to garden and his book on how to save seeds. So you get two books. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Where's the link? I got to see this. Where's it at?
I'm populating it right now.
Blowout. There it is. Okay.
Yeah, pretty cool. Oh. I might actually have to do this since I've already ruined everything that I've gotten from him.
That's a really good deal. His book, actually, I got his book. It's really good. I have to get that.
All right, guys. For us, you can follow everything that's going on at Backwoods Home Magazine, www.backwoodshomemagazine.com. We have a forum there. You have backwoodshome.com. And then please visit our forum, www.selfrelianceexpo, to find out what's going on with the expo on a regular basis. And when we talk to you next week, we hope to have a new URL for you on the new website. So, this is Bubba Da Vinci in Colorado, Ron, wrapping it up for the day. Thank you for joining us for the 3-hour show. Got anything last-minute words, Colorado, Ron?
I'm going to bed. Taking a nap.
Going to bed. Taking a nap, guys. All right, guys. Take care. We'll talk to you guys next Saturday.
Take care, guys.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com. And Wonder Mill grain grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.